If you don't like what we tell you to believe in, we'll kill you.
TheRightStuff.biz.
Yes. Welcome, everybody, to Tedious. This is 928. I just checked while the music was playing. I checked the site, and last episode was 927. So I believe that means this is episode 928. I'm here with Alex. Jesse's on vacation. Sven. Sven is on vacation this week, so it'll be me and Alex all week. Maybe we'll get someone else in here. I don't know. We'll see.
I think Mark might be available one day.
Oh, yeah. We could bring him in. That would be fine. That would be cool.
He tried to walk here last time because his car is in the shop. He's like, I'll just walk. I'm like, you know that I could pick you up, right?
How long is that? It's
5 or 6 miles, but
it's
still.
Not terrible. It depends on how
I tell the guy, like, I can pick you up. And then the next day I get a message and he's like, I'm gonna start walking now. I'm like, I told you I was gonna pick you up, dude.
Well, yeah, that's a good workout. That walk is a good workout. But the question is, like, are these roads that are roads for cars with no shoulder? If so, you should probably pick them up.
That kind of road, and it's also fucking hot as shit out there.
That's true. And when you walk on roads, and there's sun blasting them, it's really hot.
It's extremely hot, and I worry for Mark.
Deathly hot. Yes, I worry.
I don't know if Mark's delicate constitution could handle that kind of heat and humidity and just external
cars flying past you.
Yeah,
yeah. You know what's funny? I actually made an error this morning. I went to Jesse's house, and then on my drive home, I was driving home and I got behind this car, and at first I saw a cyclist. And then I saw there was a car behind them, and it was flashing its hazards. And I thought they were going to pass the cyclist, but then I got up and I realized, oh, they have no intention. They are basically escorting the cyclist. The car is there escorting the cyclist. And then I saw it had a bunch of writing on the back windshield. So I pulled up real close behind it to try and see the writing. And it said Death Valley to Beacon, New York, for human rights. And then at one point, they actually, I guess maybe because I was tailgating so hard, I wasn't like doing it to like get up their ass. I literally wanted to read their message. And they waved me around. And I was like, so I went around. But I was sick. Then, of course, afterwards, like, oh, damn, I should have stopped and rolled down my window. I'm like, what human rights in particular are you talking about? Like, what is this? It's probably some abortion thing. I would assume it's that, right? I don't know. But just said for human rights. But I was like, you know, this isn't that of an effective thing to do for human rights, because even some dude who's just driving and sees you, like, doesn't understand what the fuck you're about. And, like, you don't have a website or anything for me to go and look. So that was an interesting thing.
I was just looking to see if there's another Beacon. There's an article about this. Let's see, August 2020, Tara completed a 100-mile ride from Albany to Beacon with her sights set on Death Valley, and it's another human rights, like, protest, something in favor of human rights, I don't know.
Oh, so they're just leaving now? I thought they were getting from Death Valley to here, and I was like, that's kind of impressive if you actually made it, if you've gone that far already. You're kind of on the home stretch. You know, Beacon, it's actually not that far from here.
was it a chick?
Yeah, it was a chick.
Okay, I think I found her. I think I actually found her.
Yeah, hold on. What is it? What's the deal? I just doxed myself, but whatever. I don't really care about that. Yeah, let me look at this.
So Saturday, February 19th, Tara Simmons started this, it looks like.
So Beaconite runs from California to New York, but she's not running.
No, she's doing both, it looks like.
Okay.
It looks like there's a combination here.
Yeah, it's like running would be, okay, February 19th, Tara Simmons, a Beaconite who has been running cross-country to raise awareness of issues of impotence? Wait, what? Oh, of importance. Okay. All right, so let me see this.
Tara's mission is centered on folks knowing their human rights and understanding they are inherent, not earned. I don't know. Max Stirner might argue with you on that one. Let's see here.
Okay, well, I would, if I had known all of this, in August, Tara completed a 100-mile run from Albany to Beacon, with her sights set on Death Valley, California, for summer 22. A fundraiser to help get her there is happening Saturday, February 19th, 2020. So they've actually now they're executing this plan. My hope is to reach those sitting in pain and fear and to let them know they are inherently deserving of love, respect, and care. It is their human right. Everyone has the right to life, freedom, and safety. It is up to us to know our human rights so that we can protect ourselves and each other. Okay, so hold on.
Who?
Right to life. I mean, okay. All right. Wait, hold on. I see a lot of blaming and shaming around issues such as workplace discrimination, affordable housing, or food security. When we look to our human rights, we must recognize a common understanding of dignity and equality for all. We must start with the premise of human rights to address the issues impacting. I mean, this is just some, like, frankly, like, this is just some gay
no,
shit,
it's like, some sort of, like, high yellow mulatto.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I found her Instagram.
It's probably, like, a fucking grift.
That's what it sort of looks
like. To be honest with you. Because I wonder how much... I mean, it looked like they were actually doing it. I mean, they seem to be doing it. But, but, yeah. I mean, it's also just like... I mean, it's funny because no one's really... It's just silly. But, yeah, this is... Yeah, it looked like a very... The person... I mean, I didn't want to say it was a black person because it was just someone with dark skin. It could have been a tan white person. I couldn't tell. I didn't look long enough. I didn't see any hair because I had a bike helmet on. So, like, who cares? In the end, though, it's kind of like, who gives a shit?
She's got fucking rainbow cycling bibs on. This is atrocious.
Yeah, she was actually, when I passed her, she just had black spandex and a blue cycling shirt on. So it didn't even look all that bad. God. It looked fairly, like, relatively normal.
That's the standard uniform, black bibs or black shorts.
Yeah. So, yeah, there was no rainbows. If I'd seen the rainbows, I'd be like, all right, this is some faggot shit. But, so I actually, as I passed, I honked at them because I was kind of like, I honked to make sure she knew, right? Because the car waved me around, but I honked to make sure the cyclist knew I was passing. And, you know, I'm a courteous driver. And so she gave me, like, the thumbs up. And I was like, no, I don't support your thing. I just want to make sure.
I hate that shit whenever people give me the little courtesy honk. I'm like, no, just go around.
Oh, really?
Okay, I don't need a fucking courtesy honk. I know you're back there.
All right. Well, look, I don't know. I'm trying to be helpful, okay? I'm trying not to mow somebody down.
No, it's like, you got to be helpful, get in front of me, and then do about 30 miles an hour, and I'll ride your bumper.
Oh, okay.
And I'll draft you. That. That's the best.
Well, better. This was not a, the area I was on was not, it was not a, it was a country road, very curvy, very windy mountain country road. So like you can't go, I was probably not going more than 30 anyway, but yeah.
Now I'm distracted. I'm like doing even more digging. Oh yeah. I found her. That was easy. It was fucking easy.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to find someone like this. They're going to have a website, but yeah.
Doesn't seem to have very many activities.
It's just some dumb shit. This is just some vanity shit. Like, there's nothing to this. But yeah, it was sort of an interesting little thing. But if I hadn't accidentally gone to Jesse's house this morning, I never would have seen it. So we would have lost out on this wonderful content. So what I wanted to talk about first of all, is the bond that was given to these kids, these niggers that killed Ethan Liming. So I've got I just looked it up right now, and I've got, there's a whole bunch of websites. I'm just going to the first one that came up, News 5 Cleveland. Bonds reduced for three men indicted on lesser charges in Ethan Liming's death. So we talked about how they brought down their charges. Well, now they have cut their bond, and I believe one of them got $0 bond and is now out. So the three Akron men indicted last week on lesser charges in connection with the death of 17-year-old Ethan Liming were arraigned on those charges Thursday and given significantly reduced bonds. And the judge that did this is a woman and a Republican. So none of
I saw that she was Republican.
None of this should surprise you, right? On July 27th, the Summit County Grand Jury indicted three men on the following charges in the Summit County Court of Common Pleas: Deshaun Stafford, age 22, counts of involuntary manslaughter, aggravated assault, and assault. Tyler Stafford, involuntary manslaughter and assault. And Donovan Jones, two counts of assault. The three men were originally arraigned on murder and felonious assault charges in June. Each were held on $1 million bond. On Thursday, Deshaun Stafford's bond was lowered to $25,000 with 10% due. That means $2,500 puts this nigger back on the street. Tyler Stafford's bond was reduced to $5,000 with 10% due, meaning $500 puts him back on the street. GPS monitoring and no contact with the victim's family will be ordered for both men if a bond is posted. Jones's bond was also lowered to $500. So $3,500, and these three kids, these three niggers that murdered a kid, they're not kids, they're adults. These three niggers that murdered a kid are on the street. And I think they probably are. I thought one of them got actually zero bond. I thought one of them actually got zero. But apparently they both. So literally. And there are people that can come up with $3,500. I mean, frankly, you know, $3,500 is not very much money for something like this. And they'll come up with it. And they'll probably get some white cucks to fucking come up with it, right?
Yeah,
and like, so
bail funds.
Yeah, no announcement on whether they're out. I think I'm assuming that they are at this point. And they keep talking about, they reference this additional information, right? Additional information. So again, even in this article, according to investigators, Ethan was with a group of friends and at least one of them fired a toy gun at the men playing basketball on the courts. This led to a fight. Ethan was repeatedly punched and kicked. That's actually somewhat more of an accurate, I mean, that's still not totally accurate, but it's like somewhat more of an accurate
right.
description. Punched and kicked until he died. And, you know, I got to say, I have some criticism of what his family has been saying. And I would say to the family, if you're mad about this, if you're mad about the sentences, the charges being reduced now, you're mad about them getting bonded out.
You got to be mad about them being let out on bail like this.
Right. They're free right now. They're probably sitting at home, like, drinking lean and, like, watching dumb videos on YouTube or something like that. They're probably doing that. They're probably chilling, laughing about it. They're probably chilling, laughing about this, okay? Laughing about having done this and laughing about getting away with it and not taking it seriously at all. And if and when, you know, they get a Bronx jury or whatever, like, they're not going to care. And you know what's funny? I'll bet you right now that we will hear of one of these niggers again. If they go to jail, and even if they go to jail, remember, one of them is facing only 6 months in jail with the charges they've got now, and one of them, the worst charge is a three-year minimum, 3 to 11 years for the involuntary manslaughter. So they're going to get the minimum because they're black.
Mm.
And I'm telling you, we will hear again. Just put out a Google search, a Google alert, put something like that out for the names, these names. You will get, again, a murder or a shooting that one of these niggers was involved in. You will get that. You will find, like, once they're back on the street after this, they will do murders. You will find out about this. They will do more murders. And I'd say the parents, because apparently his parents came out and said, well, we don't think this was racial, and also started talking all that shit about the social media challenge. Well, frankly, parents, that's why this happened. The fact that you went along with that narrative, you gave them all the leeway to just stomp on your face, to shit on you, and to just let these niggers out of jail, basically reduce their sentence, blame him for getting killed, blame your son for getting killed by them, because if it was a dumb social media challenge.
I think they were going to the thing where they're explaining that they had like a multicultural family and a multiracial family and stuff.
I mean,
I find that really interesting. Do people feel the need to explain to you that they love all races? Like in any kind of
when their son was killed.
Yeah, but it's such a key piece of American programming. Like me and Mara were eating at a restaurant called McAdoo's the other day, and there was a boomer there, right? Sort of a conservative leaning boomer. Ironically enough, he's originally from Pennsylvania, he's living in Christiansburg, Virginia, and he was giving boomer sermons to the waitress, and eventually starts talking to us. You know, it starts about how hard it is in this country for people these days. And I'm like, yeah, it's especially hard if you're white. And he starts to nod and say yes, and then immediately goes into a whole spiel about how he loves black people, and he had a really good friend who was black, and he's like, you know, I'm not racist or anything, and I especially, you know, blacks are great, and I was in the military with a black guy, blah blah blah.
Yeah, but black people aren't great. Yeah. I mean, they're just not.
And I'm like, I'm sitting there like, you know, laughing to myself because I wanted to see if he's going to do that, and I figured he would, but. It's really funny that that's an instinct that you have to explain to me how you're not racist. Like, I'm not putting you on trial for racism here.
Right. Right. Well, somebody is, though. See, that's the thing. It's like white people feel like they're constantly on trial for racism in America. So, yeah, that's my thing. It's like, it is an interesting thing. Just like, did we already talk about this thing, or did we talk about this, like, after the show, this fucking stupid shit at this cheerleading camp? Do we talk about this?
I think we've talked about the case where the trainee like chokes out a.
I think we talked about this off camera, off air. I don't remember. I'd have to go back and listen to Wednesday's show. But in any case, just to sum up, so it was like a cheerleading camp. Maybe we did this on the show. I can't remember. It was a cheerleading camp, and it was in Texas, and they had a tranny, nigger. A nigger tranny. I think we did this on the show, where we're showing like the Uncanny Valley, insane like Instagram pictures of this nigger. I actually found an article from the Daily Mail on that, where they had pictures of, like, before the transition, where pictures of this nigger when he was still a faggot and still doing cheerleading and still, like, touching, like, white girl, like, teenage white girls and stuff. And, before he became a tranny and started trying to look like some kind of like lunatic insane thing. And in that case, the father of the girl who was basically choked out by this tranny nigger for saying he's a man and he has a penis, was made a point of saying, like, his son is gay. Like, I'm not homophobic. It's not that I have problems with trans people. It's that my son is gay. It's sort of interesting. When else has it ever been? Think about this historically. If you're victimized by somebody, before anybody even asks, you have to say, but I don't have anything against the category of person that victimized me or my family member. Right? Like, why is that what people feel? Like, what? I mean, think about it. That is a absolute programming. I mean, it is programming. That is, you don't get that because people are, like, naturally like this. Right? Like, you just don't. Like, if you get somebody in Europe who's murdered by a gypsy or something like that, say, like, you're an Italian man is murdered by a gypsy. Is his family going to be like, you know, it's not that we don't hate, like, first of all, we're going to say we don't hate gypsies. But in this case, it was an awful thing. He didn't deserve it or whatever. No. They will literally say, like, kill all the gypsies. Or something like that. It will be their response. Something very
fed posted. I don't think that they would feel the need to jump out in front of an accusation of being racist.
Right. That's the thing.
What a strange thing to have on your mind if your loved one gets killed.
You do see it. I think it's an English-speaking thing. I don't know if they do it in non-English-speaking countries. I use the example of gypsy because no one in Europe is ever going to say that because they've hated gypsy since before racism was a thing, and they can't get out. They can't get in front of that. I was saying to somebody, like, imagine if whites had had like 1,000-year history with blacks before the idea of anti-racism came in. It would be, I don't think it would stick quite.
Yeah.
I think they would have a harder time with it. And also the first experience with blacks was that of, like, they were literal slaves. And because of that, most white people didn't have any contact with them. And if people were against the idea of slavery, then they feel like, okay, these people had this big thing. They suffered or whatever. But that's all out the window now. But yeah, I mean, I actually think it's just a crazy thing that people have this idea. I was victimized by X protected group. I have to, it's just like everyone understands they're the protected group. Does anybody say it if they're victimized by a white person? Does it? No, they don't. They don't bother. They just say this. If they say anything, they say, wow, this guy's a scumbag. Like, he should hang or whatever the hell it is, right? Like, nobody says. What's interesting, though, is when it's like a Jew, like a Harvey Weinstein type. Do people, maybe they do, actually. Do they get out in front of the anti-Semitism thing? I think they do, depending on the issue. I don't know how many Harvey Weinstein's victims made sure to say, like, I have nothing against Jewish people. I did see it somewhat with the Jeffrey Epstein thing. I did see some of that. Well,
It's kind of like what Mark was saying, too. Like, imagine if a black person had one of their relatives killed by a white person. How funny it would be if they're like, no, listen, I love white people. White people are great. White people are some of my best friends. I am not racist. I just want this guy to pay.
Yeah, first of all, it's just not true. They would just be lying. But it's not really true with white people either. Like, when they say these things, not really true. And you wonder, if this guy... Yeah, I would not be surprised if this guy who sent his daughter to this cheerleading camp, had a gay son, because I have a feeling that it was known that this tranny nigger worked at this camp. I think that was, possibly even, considered a bonus. But I should actually try and dig up that article. Some of the audio of this shit was, this nigga was like, now, y'all can't even say I was drunk. I only had one twisted tea, and I'm of age to drink. And I was like, oh, my fucking God.
You don't have that? You don't have that video?
Let me pull it up. It's on that
the... sounds funny.
Let me see. It's on the Daily Mail cheerleading camp. Let's see what we can get here. Transgender cheerleader kicked out of cheer camp. Given assault citation after clocking out or choking out teammate 17 who called her a man with a penis. Okay, listen, I think I got it. Okay, first of all, we're gonna do the uncanny tranny here. that's what we're calling it. We're not doing uncanny valley, it's just uncanny tranny. We got the uncanny tranny with all these lunatic insane clown face Instagram shots. And I think that if this is the same article we get, no, it's not. What the hell? Daily Mail, you've failed me.
What is with the skin tones not matching? If you're going to use a filter, there's got to be a way to get that set up correctly.
Yeah, skin tones, this is a lunatic nigger. That's what it is. Okay, so let's see. This is the one. Okay, I think this might be the article. So this is the dad. Yeah, I remember we did this. We definitely did this. Okay, there's what that nigger looks like. That is what that nigger actually looks like. Okay, that's just a dude. It's just a nigger. That's just a nigger.
It's just a whole ass nigger.
That's just a whole ass grown ass man nigger. Like that. First of all, this dude. What is with him and white girl? Of course, at cheerleading camp in Texas, you're just gonna get a lot of white girls with names like Kaylee and Regan. You know, the names of the girls that at this cheer camp that this nigga
was. Don't get me started on my rant about Kaylee.
Okay.
Kaylee is the original spelling of it. It's so far removed from any version of it you see today. They basically niggerized it. Yeah. I don't understand what's wrong with people. Why did they do this to names? Yeah, why do you take a traditional fucking European or Celtic name and then you nigger it up? You take Cameron and then you misspell it. It's Kamron or something like that.
Yeah, they've actually, unfortunately, this has happened to, there's been some niggerification of some of these white type people going on. But look at this camp. This is a pic from the cheer. It looks like it's not that. Nigger's not the only faggot. I've got some serious questions about this one on the left over here. The one with the little poof top here. So, yeah.
How many niggers do they have in this camp?
Several. I'm it looks like 8 or 10, and some beaners and such. But let me see. There's this. I think the video is attached to this article. God damn it. Where is it? Okay. Maybe. Okay. Here it is. Read more Big Country homepage. Here it is. This is where the video was. If it's not here, I'm just going to shoot myself because I could have sworn it was here. Oh, it is here. Here it is. Here it is. So here it is.
We have nothing against you, Avery.
I've been nothing but nice to you.
We have nothing against you.
So here again, we also have this grown man is calling high school age teenage girls bitches.
You should have something against that guy.
And
you should.
They keep saying, we have nothing against you. And so, again, we have the phenomena of victimized people. And this is happening in a context where, you can't really see it, this is video here on the right. It's happening in a context where, because this nigger got violent and choked out a girl their age, these girls are hiding from him. And they're in a room hiding, and they're not letting him in, and he's trying to gain access to the room that they're in. So this is also, this behavior is basically some kind of menacing or something like that. Like, I don't know what the legal term would be, but it's basically like, if you're a grown-ass man and you got 17-year-old girls hiding in a room from you and you keep trying to gain access to the room, like, that's not good. Like, that's bad. You shouldn't be doing that. And I feel like almost anybody with any sense understands that. Like, so.
Because we are sitting in here talking to somebody.
You look like a man.
I know it's annoying.
I'm serious.
It's not right.
Listen, it was nothing. We don't have nothing against you. You just scared Carly.
Just Courtney, just call me a man. And the bitch opened the door.
Okay, listen.
Be come outside and beat this man up. Okay, I'm done. I'm going to sleep. But Reagan, those are fake. So watch your back.
He just said, watch your back. So this nigga's now threatening. He's threatening these teenage girls. He's telling them to watch their back. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Have a streak on Snapchat. And then,
No, we don't.
You mustn't talk to me ever again. You're making up because I've never done nothing to you but be nice to you. Carly, don't talk to me. And Courtney, tomorrow at camp. That's all I have.
What the fuck?
So apparently this is like POV video from this nigga's POV.
That sucks. The sandals here. So what's going on?
I need to say something. Say it. Why can't I say it in person? What are you scared of?
I mean, what are you scared of? First of all,
it's a gigantic nigger that thinks that it's a woman.
It's a gigantic nigger that thinks it's a woman and has already assaulted somebody. Has already shown that it is willing to be violent. It's like a clown face. It's like a lunatic clown face nigger that probably has like insane clown makeup on. It just doesn't look, you know, the Snapchat tends to smooth that out a little bit. But think about this. This is literally like a killer clown. Like, these girls are hiding in a room from a killer clown.
It's like Buffalo Bill.
Yeah, no, or, literally.
Or and you're scared of.
Why can't I say it in person? I've got something to say to you. Listen, watch your back.
Alright,
what are you scared of? I don't know, being murdered and then having you wear me like a skin suit.
Yeah, it could be, yeah.
Can I come in the door?
Can I come in the door?
Okay, Courtney, first of all, you need to calm down because who are you talking to? Okay. First of all, whoever's in there, Presley, Kalani, Raven, Courtney. Okay, well,
it's a whole bunch of names.
I'm just letting you know that outside of cheer, I don't f*** with y'all. So after today, don't f*** with me. I won't f*** with you. And Presley, Kalani, whoever's in there, don't f*** with me after cheer. Reagan, if you're in there, don't f*** with me after cheer.
So why is he? I mean, like, just the general, like the degradation of our culture. Like, he's just talking to these girls like that. He's just using that kind of language to talk to them. I mean, he's supposed to be a counselor, right? Something like that. I don't know. I mean,
I'm assuming
it's just further. Unless he's like their peer, I don't know.
We're only f***ing teammates, and that's
okay.
It.
Oh, all right.
Because at this point, y'all are f***ing taking it out of proportion. I was just joking with Carly. I've never done anything mean to Carly. I've never done anything mean to Kalani,
other than choking
Presley,
her.
Reagan, or anything. Reagan, those just talk shit about you, saying that you're fake, saying that you only want boys. They talk about you and Micah. So, yeah, watch your back, because them are fake. So, yeah. So, if anyone has a problem, come address it to my face like an adult and stop being a little scary bitch. and let me know the problem. So
this nigger is putting himself, just so people understand, okay, this is a grown-ass man dressed like a woman that has already assaulted a girl, a teenage girl, and is now trying to address these teenage girls as if he's their equal.
You'll need to have a one-on-one dialogue and exchange with me, despite the fact I'm a massive gorilla nigger and I can tear your head off. Like, how is that supposed to work?
But also, he's like, so putting himself...
Are you getting a fair hearing in that situation?
But he's like putting himself as like a peer of these teenage girls. So it's sort of like you're not on their... You're not like them. Like, I mean, it would be creepy for any man to do this. To talk to, like, I'm just one of y'all girls, and, like, I just want to work it out, like, the way we girls, like, you know. A bunch of teenage girls have some stupid argument, and they're, like, locking one out and being mean to one, and they're like, can we work it out? Let's talk. Like, who gives a fuck about that? It's just dumb shit, right?
Yeah.
But this nigger is, like, thinking he's, like, a teenage girl with them. And so he's, like, acting just like that, because he's crazy. He's a lunatic. He's an insane person.
It doesn't have anything to do with me being drunk. I'm not drunk. I have one twisted tea, and I'm above age to drink. So if you want to tell Nicole, you can tell Nicole. You can snitch. You can be a little crybaby, da-da-da-da-da. I don't give a
So he's, like, basically saying, like, don't snitch. First of all, I love how...
Wait, so he's drinking, like, right now? He's at this cheerleading camp, and he's just getting drunk while he's there? Like, is that...
Yeah, around people that are not of age to drink, which is, like, probably the least of things, because I was a camp counselor, and we used to drink. But not until the campers went to bed, but...
I was still a Bible camp counselor, and I definitely wasn't drinking there.
Oh, I was a church camp counselor as well. It was the Episcopal Church, so we were absolutely
all
drinking.
Of the connections. We were both Bible camp counselors at one point.
I said Episcopal Church. I didn't say anything about the Bible.
Right.
Yeah. No, we actually did have Bible study, which is actually the easiest time of day because a clergy person would handle it. So, like, we basically had to lead our campers to the cafeteria room, and then the priest, because we'd have a priest for the week, because it was, like, a six-week camp. And so, there were different priests each week would come from the Episcopal Church someplace in New Jersey, and they would be the priest for the week. And so, they would run Bible study. So, we just get our campers in there, and we'd take an hour off. It was great. Loved it. But, anyway, let's just finish this out. This is fun. That's really not so fun, though, because it shows you what an insanely sick society we have.
But, Courtney, you need to watch your tone, because this has nothing to do with you. This has nothing to do with fucking Kalani Presley or any of y'all. So, yeah. And that's all I have to say. So, at the end of the day, we're just teammates. At the end of the day, I don't give Courtney, shut up. You're not even in this. Okay, well, I am now. Okay, well, come outside then.
You're a man.
I'm not a man, if I'm a girl. My license says I'm a female, bitch.
You have a penis.
Okay, and what are you going to do about it?
Is she being for real right now?
She's being
dead. Oh.
Okay, so first of all, this nigga appears to have allies with some of these girls. At least one of which is white. The other one is black. So these girls again said, you're a man and you have a penis. And he's like, what are you going to do about it? What a strange...
So at this point, we've chased them into the bathroom. They're hiding in a stall from this nigger.
Or some room. They barricaded themselves into some
room. Yeah, they like barricaded themselves inside of a room here. And he's like daring one of them to come out.
Yeah. And it looks like to me, like, he's got some allies. Like, there's some of these cheerleading girls who are, like, on his side and are now outraged that, again, someone said it's a man.
Fuck no.
No.
Wrong.
Fuck. What the fuck?
Bitch. I barely touched Charlie. As a fucking joke, bitch.
Okay, so looks like we got some racial solidarity here, because that other voice is definitely a female negress.
Oh, imagine that.
So the female negress is basically mad at the white girls for saying this nigger is a man and has a penis and also is now... It seems like that really set them off. The claiming that this dude with a penis has a penis.
He acknowledges he's got one because he says, what are you going to do about it?
I mean, but it's like... So what I'm going to do is, like, nothing. I'm going to get away from you. Like I'm gonna do about what I'm doing right now, hiding in a room from you. And what's amazing about this whole thing? Well, we got like just a minute left here. If there's
anything. Well, get a sense of humor.
Okay, yes. No one wants to hurt Carly.
She didn't let you say that, bro.
So it looks like this girl is white.
She has not known me for 2 days. Which was at tryouts. We tried out together. We took pictures together, and everything was fine.
She was terrified.
Bro, are you kidding me?
And you crossed a line.
Scary. You won't even open the door. So you're talking through the door. So at this point, you're scary. You're just bumping your guns like a little crybaby bitch. But anyways, Carly, there's no beef between me and you.
All right. Well, that's enough of that. That's about where it goes. But yeah, so I don't know. I remember we did this on Wednesday, and I got home and I looked this up and I saw this video and I was like, oh my God, this fucking country. Like, I really don't know what to do with this country at this point. I mean, there were actually girls on this nigger's side. And it's purely because of the goody two-shoes thing of they said the bad thing they're not supposed to say, which is that this man
is just being physically assaulted is it's lower in the hierarchy than using a bad word.
Well, you don't really get taught that that's bad in America. You don't really get taught that, like, I mean, I guess it's sort of a background assumption, but, you know, it's been a long time since any of the stuff they focused on teaching kids about this stuff had to do with, like, what happens if you're being abused or you're a victim of violence or what are your rights relating to that and things like that. It's all this shit. It's all this tranny stuff. So these girls were basically been trained. I mean, and also the other thing that apparently we've got, which is, you know, we've talked before about the schools and the tranny stuff, but apparently that's not the main input. There's been some research done into this. The main input into this is social media, like mainly sites like TikTok and such, where like all these kids, these whippersnappers are on, and the tranny ideology is pushed very hard in these places, less so than in the schools. The schools, actually, interestingly enough, depending on where you are, obviously, they push it harder or don't. If it's a really wealthy, like, libtarded Jewish area, they're going to push it hard. But there are places where they don't really do it at all. But where the kids are mainly getting it, where girls this age would mainly be getting it, will be their phones. Will be from their phones. And, you know, it looks like this dad... What's also funny is how everybody in this dispute acts like a nigger, including the dad.
Yeah.
The dad who then says, like, he says, like, yeah, my son is gay, but then also starts, like, smack-talking back and forth with this tranny, like it's a smack-talking thing. He's like, I know you lying, bitch. I got the video. It's going to come out. You're going to be sorry. It's like, all right, like, wow, everyone is a nigger. Like, all these people are niggers. What can you do?
Yeah.
So, would you have something else there that you're looking at?
No, I was looking at a totally unrelated thing that's been floating around, this hilarious definition of hate crime from, this is the Crown Prosecution Service.
Oh, is this England or Canada?
England, Canada, same shit.
Yeah.
So their definition of hate crime is really something. Any crime can be prosecuted as a hate crime if the offender has either demonstrated hostility based on race, religion, disability, sexual orientation, or transgender identity, or have been motivated by hostility based on race, religion, disability, sexual orientation, transgender identity. However, this is where it gets really interesting. There is no legal definition of hostility, so we use the everyday understanding of the word, which includes ill will, spite, contempt, prejudice, unfriendliness, antagonism, resentment, and dislike. It's like, no, wait a minute. So you don't have a legal definition for the thing that you're legally prosecuting people for? How the fuck does that work? How is it supposed to work?
Yeah, so we'll just use something that's totally the everyday ordinary thing, just so we can make everyday ordinary things illegal.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's just basically, you know, it's basically like you are legally required to like people in Britain.
Yes. Yeah. Or if you don't like people, you better be sure never to have an interaction with them. Because, yeah.
Don't publicly say that you dislike another group or individual. You'll get in trouble.
Now, this is also the same country that was, like, discouraging people from having a best friend because that would be racist.
What?
Oh, you know, remember we did this on the show a couple years ago. Like, these daycare teachers in Britain were, like, policing the kids if they started to form, like, bonds with, like one-on-one bonds. like a best friend type thing, like this, you know, which is what kids do. You know, they pick their best friend because it's exclusionary. And the real reason was because it was racial. Like they have these mixed schools, and if the white kids become my best friend, it's another white kid, and the same for the black kids or the Indians or whatever other races they've got in the schools there. So then they get these segregated cliques, and they don't want that. So they want to break up these from forming early, in hopes that the things that they show on TV, which are these totally, you know, one person, five people cliques with one person of every race in the clique. And, you know, and then
British television is a trip. I thought American TV was bad. I think
it's worse for whatever. It's weirdly worse. I can't explain why.
I don't think it's weirdly worse. I think what it is that Britain is white. Their entire history is white. So whenever you see like a black Sherlock Holmes, black historical characters, you're like, this is just wrong. Like, no, this is fucking wrong. This is not right.
Well, they also, did you remember that ad we showed on, I couldn't find it now, but we showed it on this show where it was like there was a multiracial clique hanging out, and then the white kid is the one that starts hooting and hollering like in a suggestive way at a black girl, and then like the dark black, like African looking nigger is like, "Hey, Mike, that's not cool."
Yeah.
And it's like, this is just not real. But they want to like generate these type of cliques, these phony cliques, where they have like five people, each of one different race, like breakdancing together in the park, and then the black is the one teaching them not to harass women. I mean, the question would be like, who is there anybody that thinks that that's real, or do they just actually get the real message from that, which is that you're just being racially intimidated?
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, that's just racial intimidation. And if you were to say to somebody, like, that's fucking bullshit, like, there's no cliques like that, they'd be like, oh, can you explain that further, please? And they'll start, like, taking notes to, like, hand over to, you know, MI5 or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah. And then the Crown Prosecution Service comes to your house.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's.
Yeah. The blackification, though, of British television, I guess the other real bad thing about it is, like, you're paying for it yourself. Like, you're paying for this.
Yeah, they have to pay a BBC. I think
I'm paying to get propaganda that attacks my race. I was watching a YouTube video a while back, and it was some British historian, and it was just depressing, like, watching this guy go on about these modern historical shows and documentaries and point out just how insanely anachronistic it is to have blacks in these roles.
Oh, yeah, it's totally anachronistic, and they try and pretend like it's not, and they even address it. I remember there was this Doctor Who, where, of course, they're time-traveling, and, you know, there's this black woman, and they go back to Victorian era, and they've got, like, Chinese and, like, niggers and stuff all over the streets in London, and she's like, wait, I thought I was told, and Doctor Who is like, history's been whitewashed, and then, like, walks on, and I'm like... No,
it hasn't.
No, it wasn't.
Photographs.
It wasn't. Yes, you can see pictures
from that era, and you can look.
Additionally, they have data on, like, they know who lived there. Like, the Victorian government had records on the citizens of Britain and who they were and what their names were and what their addresses were and where they lived. Everyone knew who was there. They're all white. They're all British. Actually, they had some non-British, but they're still white. That was a bit of a scandal.
That historian that was making, he was like, look, we've got records on this. We know who was there in this particular time period.
Yeah.
And we know that there were basically no blacks in Britain at this particular time period here. Like, what are you doing?
Well, blacks in Britain started coming, guess when? After the Second World War.
Wow, I didn't know it was that late.
Yeah, I mean, there was probably there was some before then, but they made William Wilberforce was like the kind of the faggoty libtard aristocrat who was like, they made a movie with him starring Ioan Gruffudd, the Welsh actor whose last name is spelled Gruffudd. So they made a movie with him about where he played William Wilberforce, and he was like their big abolitionist activist or whatever. And he was super rich, right? And so one wonders, like, what were you covering for? But, like, the abolitionism that Britain engaged in was mainly, and they actually did do this. And George Bernard Fraser, who wrote the Flashman books, has a rant, because there's a lot of times in those books, which are these comedy historical fiction novels, he will have a character do a rant that is obviously in his voice. And he does a rant on how, like, if you want to talk about who freed the slaves, he's like, you should thank the young privateers of the British Navy. Because they were the ones that went out there and actually fought sea battles to stop slave boats. And I think that he's correct about that. So the anti-slavery activism in Britain was mainly using, like, and they, it wasn't just their navy. They also paid privateers to, like, intercept. And apparently it was one of those things, like, you can take the, you earn prize money and stuff like that if you take these ships or whatever. And, but they didn't, weren't like bringing them into Britain. I think they had some black slaves there, but it wasn't that many. But when it really started was after the war, when Winston Churchill, who they pretend was a super popular guy, lost the election in 1945. He lost to this libtard, Clement Attlee, the Labour politician. So supposedly this really super hyper popular wartime prime minister, right? Everyone loved him. No, they fucking hated him. They hated him so much that they voted him out. And it was resentment for having to have fought the war. That was why. Because the war wasn't popular. It wasn't popular. And they saw Winston Churchill as having dragged them into it. The idea of Winston Churchill being popular is a myth that mainly is done in America. Actually, people in Britain don't really do it because they know the truth. He's more lionized over here. Because over there, someone's going to open their mouth and say some shit about him if you start fanning his nuts. There are some of these bulldog nationalists, which are sort of the same thing as like fake Christian nationalists or Magatards here, you know, like the people that push this line, because of course they want to give you a pseudo-nationalistic figure who's also a total pawn and cuck for Jews. But he was voted out. But of course, in the way of things, Clement Attlee then opened the doors for immigration from non-whites from the Commonwealth. And it was a big deal because they didn't really have laws in Britain addressing race at the time. It just wasn't on the books. Didn't think about it. And so employers and people immediately started like de facto discrimination, where basically if an employer found out it was a black person, they would cancel interviews or just see them coming and be like, yeah, don't bother interviewing. And so then they had to address this at the level of law, right, to prevent people from just naturally doing this, because that was just what they were doing as a matter of course. So they went from doing that as just sort of as a matter of instinct and just as a matter of course. Seeing a black walking down the road, if you put up a help wanted sign and right. No thanks. Literally, they didn't, no thank you. And this was such a problem that of course they had to pass laws. And then after this, Winston Churchill gets elected again. So they were so mad about Clement Attlee. They hated Winston Churchill. They vote him out for this libtard. Then the libtard starts bringing in mixed race people, and then blacks and all these other, mainly blacks from like Jamaica. Also, Jamaican blacks are like, I mean, first of all, you the idea you have of a Jamaican is like a Rastaman with like the dreadlocks and he's smoking weed and he's all peaceful. That is not what Jamaica is like. Okay. Anybody's named Jamaica, whether in Queens or in actual Jamaica, is a fucking shithole filled with like criminal niggers shooting each other.
No, I know that. I know that because I watched a great documentary. It was called Predator 2, and the Jamaican crime cartel was a big part of the film.
Jamaica is a really violent place. Yeah. It's really bad. Like Kingston.
That's what I understood. Yeah.
Kingston, Jamaica is like a lot of murders going there, a lot of crime. And so the Rastas are like not, and a lot of the Rasta people do it too. And I'm sure they're also doing it as well. But
yeah. Well, I mean, in the documentary, it was a Rasta was like the big crime boss.
Yeah, well, or is it just a nigger with dreads? I mean, I guess that's just what a Rasta is, right? It's just a nigger with dreads. I mean, a Rasta, whatever. But, so those were the first ones they were letting in, and of course the discrimination. So then they elected Winston Churchill again, the next election, because they were pissed off about the immigration. And that's what he ran on. That's another thing. That was what he ran on. That was it. He was criticizing this. He was basically doing keep Britain white. And people forget that, like, Eric fucking Clapton in the 70s said at a concert, like stop the boats, keep Britain white, or something like that. In the 70s. Because it was still, even then, it was very, very novel to see blacks and have them around.
Well, that brings me to this other thing. Patriotic Alternative had done a protest recently. Mm-hmm. And apparently there was a cop that shows up. The cops, you know, trying to make small talk with some of the people that are in Patriotic Alternative. And then he asked them, he says, so have you got anything planned for Indigenous Peoples Day? And this gave me whiplash because for a minute there, I'm like, wait a minute. Indigenous Peoples Day in Britain, doesn't that mean white people? Right?
Right.
Aren't you Indigenous? Is that not where your fucking race is from?
Yeah, I'll be like, every day is Indigenous Peoples Day in Britain.
How does a British person needs to explain this to me. How does this work? So Indigenous Peoples Day, I'm assuming is a thing they're celebrating over there because the cops asking them about it. Does that mean that you get to be a proud British person and talk about your heritage? Because, I mean, you are fucking Indigenous. That's where you're from.
Right. I think that there's been an attempt to rectify this inconvenient definition of this word. It actually just excludes whites.
Does the way this work, is it sort of like, as a white person, you just can't be Indigenous?
Well, the funny thing is, I think they're supposed to celebrate, theoretically, I think, and the British fans, which we have a lot of, could write in, the Indigenous people are supposed to celebrate are like Indigenous peoples of the Commonwealth, except for British? So you celebrate like Jamaicans.
What the fuck's like, but I'm literally the indigenous person in the Commonwealth.
What's hilarious is, though, those Jamaicans are not indigenous to Jamaica. They're indigenous to Africa. They were brought there because they were fucking slaves, because it's a fucking slave colony. I mean, Jamaica was basically a slave colony, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Any place in the Caribbean is populated by blacks. Like, that shit is not, those people, those niggas are not indigenous. In fact, Europeans have been in America longer than those niggas have been in the West Indies. Right? Like, they're not indigenous people. They're as, if they're indigenous, then so am I.
Right. That sort of raises the obvious question. What about white people in the other colonies?
Well,
are they indigenous?
I actually think that particularly Appalachian whites, Scots-Irish Appalachian whites, who many have been pre-revolution, are effectively indigenous.
They pretty much are, yes.
Because they've totally adapted to that land, to the land where they live, and like they're at home there, and it's like no one else lives there. I mean, Indians, fucking, to the extent they were there at all, they've all been driven out. Like, so yeah, I would actually say like Appalachian people are effectively indigenous.
I mean, it's a very interesting question, though, that is there any place on Earth where you can talk about being an indigenous white person?
You would think Europe, but no.
I mean,
no. They probably have some. They definitely don't give it to Russians, because they now. I was looking at some of what these Antifa are saying about Russia, particularly in lieu of this, in light of this Ukraine thing, and they were like, "Remember, Russia is a colonial. This is the thing they always say: colonial settler states, right? What? Now they actually do apply this to Israel, but of course their rhetoric never means anything in terms of U.S. support for Israel." But they're saying, remember, Russia should not be viewed as like the Russians are natives there, because they're like, because they're actually a colonial settler state because of all this land they conquered where there was non-whites living there. Now, I'm saying that's true, but I also don't care. And they certainly, Russians are the indigenous peoples of the European Russia, the part of Russia that's in Europe. Although then you could say, well, what really happened is that there were these Slav peasants and these Vikings came down and conquered and became the Russian aristocracy. But they're still all white, though.
Yeah.
It was still a group of white people that was conquered by another group of white people, and then a class structure formed around that. But now they're all just Slavs. Anyway, whatever. Actually, there's probably some Russians.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be sort of like talking about indigenous peoples, and, you know, Comanches took over this particular territory from the indigenous people living there. So is that colonialist? I mean, how does this work?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not as if these groups...
Yeah, if one tribal group displaces another tribal group thousands of years ago, does it really matter?
Or even just like at the same time that the Europeans were moving in there? Because that was happening. I mean, the Europeans witnessed this and documented it. Of course, you don't have documents of it happening before because these people don't have fucking writing. But or even the idea of remembering history as part of a value system that they had. But yes, the Cortez, among others, witnessed genocides between these Indian tribes and even tried to stop it sometimes, and it was like, look at the thanks he got for that, right? But you know, I was like, I think there was like a thing where it was like a toss-up. There's some, again, it's like they were destroying statues of Cortez down there, but then there's people that actually are like, no, we like, a lot of people are like, no, he's fine, we like him. Even some of the mixed race people. So I don't know, I can't really comment on South America. I don't know that much about it, but yes, it is funny, because anywhere in Europe, you would assume people are indigenous. And if they're not, well, the conquering that happened was, I mean, you could say, oh, English actually are not indigenous because of 1080 and William the Conqueror, but he's still white. And right. I would also say that anybody descended from William the Conqueror's invading force is probably indigenous British at this point.
Yeah, this deconstruction can be applied to virtually any race or civilization.
But it's never applied to. I mean, certainly, you know, one place niggers are not indigenous? South Africa.
Right.
See you, the Africa. At least I believe the coastal areas, the parts that where they founded their trading colonies, the Boers, or the people that became Boers, the French and Dutch mix that became Boer. Oh, I think there's a whole bunch. It's like an eclectic, Boers like an eclectic mix of Europeans, mainly Dutch and French. And they, you know, there was nobody there.
Because the people that were in that region were not capable of agriculture, so...
Or
unless there was like, yeah, it's like unless there was food, just abundant food sources there. Of course, there's not going to be any of the natives living in that region.
They did not encounter blacks until they went up north into some of the more jungly areas. I mean, we had Jan Lamprecht on, and he explained this history. I've spoken with him, and he explained all this history of Sea of the Africa. That and in fact, there was. I believe he even told us there was. Forgive me if I get this wrong. There was like this tribe of people that were like kind of off black. They weren't like blacks, because there's a whole genetic diversity in Africa. So it was actually a tribe of people that they did encounter, the Europeans did encounter, and then were like genocided by blacks. And this type of person is just not around anymore. I mean, there were probably some dumb like Aboriginal type racism. I mean, there's like this race of short people. They weren't quite niggers, but they weren't like, they certainly weren't like Zola or like, sorry, Xhosa. Or Zulus, or not, where they say Osa, like Osa, like that's how you're supposed to say. You're supposed to have like, it's like a click sound or something like that. But those people were, you know, genocided. They were supposedly living somewhere around where the Europeans had landed. Anyway,
that's what I heard, was that there, whatever blacks were there obviously weren't the Zulu, and it was the Zulu that was wiping them out. Like they were being exterminated by the larger ethnic group, which was the Zulu.
Well, there's two main nigger tribes in Sea of the Africa, and it's the Zulu and the Xhosa, which is spelled Xhosa, X-H-O-S-A, but it's like Xhosa.
You gotta make that click noise. Yeah.
I can't really do it, yeah. That's what I was told by a Sea of the African, that you're supposed to be Xhosa. Like, but I'm again, whatever. You know, I played that video recently. I was on this show, I was on Strike and Mike, where Eugene Terriblanche, who was the leader of this, like basically fascist right-wing pro-white party in Sea of the Africa before the fall of the... or right during the time of the Nigger Revolution, who was being interviewed by Louis Theroux. Remember our buddy Louis Theroux?
Mm-hmm.
And Louis Theroux was asking him, like, he asked him, like, give me the traits of a Boer. And he was like... patriotism, Christianity, ruggedness, like basically all these traits, right? And then Louis Theroux's like, well, what if somebody had all these traits, but they just weren't white? And Eugene Terriblanche is like, what, are you fucking kidding me? Like, he's like, can they be Boer? And he's like, no! And so... the thing is,
it's kind of funny because Tim is so intuitive, he doesn't even feel the need to mention the race.
Well, in terms of treating the traits of the Boer, but eventually, like, I think he actually might have said you have to be white. I think he might have said, let me get the video. I'll show you. I'm happy to repeat
content. Have to eventually say that. It may not have occurred to him.
Oh, dude, if you haven't seen this, I just want your visceral react to this. Because it's amazing what this fucking libtard says. Now, Louis Theroux is actually known for being a total cuck, frankly. Like, he's even, like, as black nationalist. Like, why are you racist? Like, so he's just, like, got, like, some outdated programming. But, yeah, I've played this before. Played it a few weeks ago on Strike, and I'm like, I'm going to play it now because it's quite unbelievable. So let me get the video up. And I want your visceral reaction to this. I want people to see your sort of visceral reaction to this video.
Yeah. But you can have Johannesburg. Is that Johannesburg?
Yeah.
Okay, I give it to you tonight.
Really?
You can have him.
I don't claim any part of South Africa personally.
I am not claiming Johannesburg.
Okay. Why not?
Because Johannesburg is a place where the war started. There are a majority of black people and people from foreign countries. They can have it with love.
He means England.
Okay. So
it can be a state in a state.
So what does that leave?
Say again?
What does that leave? That leaves this area here?
Oh, that is the two republics of the Transvaal and the Orange Free State. I'll write it in Afrikaans, Free State. Now, my friend, we can start to talk culture.
Just to make it a little easier to understand, I brought a small chart. A lot of these qualities are in black people and coloured people too.
No, they're not.
Can a non-white person be a boor?
Never.
Never.
He can never be a boor.
What about if he has all these qualities? Christian, God-fearing, accepts the elements, weather, toughness, pride, patriotism, sense of history, speaks Afrikaans, and he just happens not to be white.
Are you fucking kidding?
It is not a matter of black and white, my friend. You really do not understand.
Why?
We are not Africans from Africa. We are white people, the descendants of the British and the Irish and the French people and the Dutch people.
Mm.
We are from Europe. You don't want me to rule those two Boer republics as the sole property of the Boer people. Look,
can I make a distinction?
No. No, you ask me the question and I answer it. No, definitely no. My task is to defend my people against the ideas to destroy my people.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Wow.
If I could recap, Christian, God-fearing, accepts the elements, the weather, toughness, pride, patriotism of being a Boer, sense of history, Boer history, ideally should speak Afrikaans, not essentials.
You work very hard to come to the last point.
Yes.
Must be white.
Must
yes.
be white.
If we allow black people or non-white people to become Boer people, then it will be the end of the existence of the Boer people, because in South Africa alone there are only 3.5 million against 40 million black people.
There's an exciting new country, a democratic country.
Exciting?
Yes, South
exciting.
Africa. It seems
why are you saying that? What is exciting? Exciting that the people who build the highways and the schools are not in the government anymore. Is that exciting?
Can we just
Oh wait, this fucking faggot is like, you're hectoring me.
Yes.
He's the one who's like, why can't like blacks, man, this video is fucking golden. Yeah, maybe first of all, maybe you need to be hectored a bit, Louis Theroux, you fag. But secondly, it's like, weren't you just hectoring this guy on, like, letting niggers pretend like they're boars? Like, why is that not hectoring? You're literally a fucking journalist! A journalist complaining about being hectored?
I like how this dude is just explaining simple fucking logic. Like, hey, there's 3 million of us and there's 40 million of them. If we incorporate them into our thing, we cease to exist.
Yeah, no, that's just true. Also, like, a black person can't be a boar. Because you have to be white. It's like, and then why? Well, because we're not blacks. We're not black people from Africa.
Could you imagine trying to explain, having Louis Theroux try to explain this to like a Jew?
Well, as Louis to why Theroux also fully understands every word coming out of Eugene Terriblanche's mouth. He gets it. His job is to like not get it. I'll say, as far as hectoring, well, what happened to Hector? Achilles killed him and he dragged his body around the city behind a chariot. So, you know, I'm just saying, this is a thing that happened in history, well, in myth, but yeah, anyway, there's a little bit more here.
Lower the
also, that's something no nigger ever would ever know, that cultural reference there.
Right.
Oh, and it's slightly
no,
because of
no, pride. You're having the interview with me. I'll choose the volume of the tone. Do you understand me?
Yes.
Okay, then you accept it. And if you don't want to have your interview, take your cameras and go at
me. Okay, okay. Understood.
So, I'm not in court, and you're not cross-questioning me, okay?
No, I understand that.
Okay.
No, I just
so don't try to be cocky, my friend.
I'm not trying to be cocky.
Yeah.
I'm really trying to establish some kind of dialogue.
No, you're not. You fucking liar.
And never tell me I must reduce my volume. I'm a boor, and I don't need you or your publicity, my friend.
Mm.
All right?
I think it's... it's obvious that we're not going to agree about everything. I would say, though, that...
So go home!
Look how old he is right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, Louis Theroux is a fag. Like, this is his thing, right?
This is, like, young in his career, and I don't think he was...
he probably... Well, I'm sure that dealing with Eugene Terriblanche is a little bit different than dealing with fucking Nick Fuentes, to be honest with you. I'm sure you got a little bit different feel there, right? But also, like, I would say, like...
There,
if, so. Okay, so if you're saying... let's you know, we're not going to agree on everything. Okay, fine. But guess what? You're English. Go the fuck home. Thoreau, also Thoreau. What kind of name is that? You know what kind of name that is? It's a Norman name. It's this nigga was a Frenchman. He's descended. You're a descendant of conquerors yourself, my friend. You conquered English people.
Yeah, he's a colonialist.
Yeah, you're a descendant of colonialists. You're wearing your gay ass Hawaiian shirt. Maybe he's trying to. He's thinking, oh, I'll go to South Africa. I'll fit in with this dumb, stupid shirt on. Like, I don't. If you want to fit in there, you wear like the you dress like fucking Eugene Terrapoint. Anyway,
just like that guy.
Anyway, let's see how much more there is. We didn't play this whole thing on.
I've never seen this clip before.
Well, you know, it's funny. If you go, yeah, this is a fantastic clip. If you scroll up a little bit, look at what we got here. All comments turned off. Because obviously, if comments were turned on, everybody would be siding with Tara Blanche and telling Louis Theroux he's a fucking faggot. That should shut up. So anyway, let's see. Let's go. This is a BBC. This is actually a BBC Studios video. There, it's like, here, let's put out a five-minute video of our own reporter just getting owned.
Moderated somewhat in your beliefs, because years ago it seemed as though you were talking about armed struggle and predicted a civil war.
But I predicted that there will be a revolution between black nations in South Africa.
And so what does the AWB, your organization, do at that point?
Well, we will defend ourselves. We will not allow those forces.
I mean, do you sort of grab your land then? Do you grab this area of the Transvaal and the Orange Free State?
Listen, I am not grabbing anything. I am entitled to my country.
That's what I meant. I mean,
right. So, I mean, now it gets into the political discussion where he's trying to bait him into basically saying what the bad thing is, which is like, oh, so you're going to grab us. You know, the land's been grabbed, my friend. The land's been grabbed. And what he's saying there, I mean, to go, this is. Some people might not know the history there, is that those are white states. Those republics that were ultimately conquered by the British and now are part of this nation of South Africa were white Boer republics. It's a long history. There's a couple of other ones also that were in there, too.
It's a long history, but the long and short of it is that they came to an area that was depopulated, and they colonized it, and they did permanent agriculture, and then suddenly, oh, well, now blacks want to show up.
Yeah.
Weird. Yeah, that works.
And then because of the post-colonial, so-called post-colonial, which is really... And post-colonial isn't the right term. Post-World War II. Post-World War II ideology. Right? And South Africa actually successfully defended themselves because they created, an apartheid, racial apartheid regime in 1948, which was actually the best... system for everybody there. That was the best. That was the best they could come up with. And in fact, it was much more stable.
People we could interview about this, but my understanding was you had all these black racial groups that were coming to the region, and of course the Boers, they had to manage that. And what they came up with was actually better for everyone. And you can find blacks today who will tell you that.
Oh yeah, they'll tell you that because they don't. Now they just don't get anything, right? And, of course, it's like, as he says, like, you know, anyway. So it's a long history, but yes, this sort of funny.
Let's say, you know, hey, there's apartheid, and you essentially had, like, sundown laws and things like that, but you weren't going to get shot or stabbed on your way to work.
No, and that goes for both black people and white people.
You don't have to have that much of an IQ. You could be just a black person in Africa and prefer to not get shot and stabbed constantly, right?
Well, all I'll say is this. It seems that when white people are being really oppressive to blacks and like discriminating and segregating for whatever reason, blacks still prefer to live there because as is well documented, blacks from other parts of Africa were constantly infiltrating themselves and so immigrating, but really infiltrating because the other blacks didn't want them there either into South Africa. Like they were kept all the countries to the north and to the side of South Africa, like Angola and Botswana and shit like that. They were all trying to get their niggers in like to there because they wanted to live in a place where white people had set up the amenities. White people had built the roads, and white people had created the water systems and the sewers, and wanted to live in those places.
There's some sort of social order. You don't have to worry about being genocided with a bunch of machete wielding niggers. Like
that stuff was probably still going on. I'm sure that in the black areas. I mean, I'd have to look. I don't know. I'm sure that there was still violence.
To keep them separated.
Yes,
because that's like really what was going on with apartheid. It wasn't necessarily – I mean, maybe I'm talking my ass here, but it didn't seem to me to be just necessarily about separating whites from blacks. It seemed to be about segregating blacks from other blacks to stop them from butchering.
That could be. I don't know as much about it. That could be. There was a number of different cantons and things like that, as they called it. And I think that maybe they did separate them tribally so they wouldn't kill each other.
I'm almost positive they did. But
you'd have to. But, yeah, anyway. But, again, that just goes to show – so – the point of that is that those people aren't indigenous. And yes, I mean,
the other point is that the white South Africans were acting in good faith. I mean, they didn't just genocide the blacks that came into the region.
Right. I mean, you know what's funny? And this is something I would actually say to Eugene Terrablanche. You know how Eugene Terrablanche died?
I'm assuming from a black.
It was blacks that were his farm laborers killed him.
Oh, jeez.
Well, again, that's part of the Boer thing, though, is having the is using like this black farm labor, and part of that was also though it's like now you got a black revolution, and these farm hands that you thought were your buddies are going to machete you to death. So, I mean, there you go. You know, but that's also the reason they do that. Not to make excuses for it, is just shortage of hands, right? Like they don't have that many white people. So if you're going to do this, But then you have these problems. So I would say. Maybe use white farm labor and just, but whatever. Again, it's not, you know, this is years ago when this was like still happening, and this guy died, and you know, it was funny, even when he died, Jacob Zuma actually went out there and he had to say, this was a terrible thing, this is a horrible crime, we don't support this at all, and so, but still, sad. But he basically had the correct arguments for Louis Theroux, though, who didn't... And again, he shows you... This is a good example. I urge people to, you know, watch and absorb this video, because if, you know, this is... don't talk to journalists, as we've been saying, but, like, if I were to talk to a journalist, this is the kind of thing, you know, I would do. Because it's... They are asking you questions that are... The purpose of every question that Louis Theroux is asking here is to... undermine the your fundamental legitimacy by getting you to start to try to justify it to him. So if you don't try that, you're just like, no, fuck you. This is what it is. He's got nothing. You don't give him any. If you start trying to, like, on his own terms, justify yourself, you're going to lose, because his terms are set up for you to not... For you not to be legitimate, like this idea, like what if a black person that has all these qualities? It's like, well, no, because the quality they don't have is being white.
Yeah, well, you notice he says that he doesn't need this interview. He's like, I don't need your publicity,
right?
Like I'm doing this as a courtesy to you to even give you an interview,
right? Right. Well, he probably wanted to like own this guy. I mean, he probably did somewhat want the publicity, but he probably wanted the publicity of like owning him.
Right, but, which is the best kind of publicity.
Yeah, I mean, just having yourself, like, abusing this BBC reporter is fantastic propaganda. I mean, that's the thing. It's really funny, because you wonder, what sort of person watches this interview and is like, yeah, I like Louis Theroux, right? Which is sort of funny, because this video is put out by BBC Studios, and the comments are closed. It's an older video. It was uploaded years ago. I can't see the date here. But I remember I've been watching this video for years, and it's really funny, because the question would be then, well, Louis Theroux, also, do you go to the Zulus and the Hossa people and ask them, can a white person be one of you? Think about it, because it's like, okay, if you go like, okay, so you're sitting down with like Julius Malema. I don't know which tribe he is, right? But he's one of these leaders of these savage nigger tribes in South Africa, who's particularly one of the ones that sings Kill the Boer and stuff like that. So he should be allowed to be Boer. So, and you're like, okay, so Julius, what are some of the, let's say Zulu, I don't know, maybe he's with the other tribe. Mandela was the Hossa tribe. That's like the Morgan Freeman people, like with the dots on their cheeks and stuff. And the Zulus are just niggers. you look at Mandela. Mandela was Hossa. That's why they always have Morgan Freeman play him, because like Morgan Freeman looks like one of these niggers. But the Zulus are just these West African niggers, right? Just like what you would expect. So I'd just say you're talking to you're like, oh, you're Zulu, okay? So what are the qualities of Zulu? Like savagery, unthinking violence, rape, incest, AIDS, or not AIDS? Actually, malaria. Sorry, malaria. Or tendency to catch tropical diseases, superstition.
It's a lack of knowledge about your own history.
Yeah, low knowledge of history, illiteracy, which are terrors of animals. So what if inability to run a complex society, lack of understanding of how agriculture works, tendency to think that stuff white people do is magic. What if a white person just had all these qualities? They just happen to be white. Can they be a Zulu?
I mean, they'll have Down syndrome at that point.
But. Right. The Down syndrome person's not going to be violent, though. Yeah. Down syndrome people aren't typically violent, right? They're typically very docile and friendly, actually. So you're not going to actually get it, right?
At this point, we got to find a white retard that's extremely violent.
They exist, but they probably have multiple sort of comorbidities of various psychological disease. I mean, there are probably really dumbass white people that are very savage and violent. There's a few of them. Say that. Why can't that? Like, let's find one. Let's find some really dumb, violent white criminal and be like, can this guy be a Zulu? We're happy to give him over to you if you want him.
I mean, obviously the Zulu have some sense of ethnic identity because they know who to kill.
Yeah, that's
people that aren't them.
Which is sort of funny because it's like talking about Christians and Muslims in Africa. Like, really, all it means is which you kill the other group. Yeah. Like, if you're an African Christian, it's like, what does that mean? Does it mean you accept Jesus Christ as your savior and you're like, you know, your sins? No, it means you kill like the niggers that Muslims. Say they're Muslims.
Yeah, no, because I've seen this firsthand because I had worked alongside some people from Sudan, some blacks from Sudan. They were Christian, and what I learned from them is that they hated faggots and they hated Muslims.
In that case, there's another racial issue there, though, because there's an Arab ruling class in Sudan.
Oh, that explains quite a bit.
Yeah, I think the national language of that country is Arabic. Like, some of these African countries, Arabic is actually the tongue they're supposed to use because they were just conquered by Arabs. But, it could be, I'm sure there's also black Muslims in Sudan as well, but I think there's like a upper crust, like a ruling class that's like Arabs, and that they had a kind of a race war with the niggers. I know that there was like in Sudan, when it was a British colony, there was a revolt led by something called the Mahdi, which actually I think was or the Mahdi is a thing in like Islamic theology, and of course obviously inspired what's his name, Frank Herbert, to write Dune was this myth. But there was a dude that called himself this that was leading a revolt against the British in Sudan, I believe, and it's a long story. But so there's a racial thing there too. But then you have the Abyssinians, though, which is also Ethiopians, they were Christians and they were also fucking savages. You know, they actually had more than any other African country. Ethiopia / Abyssinia, whatever you want to call it, had some cities built from stone that was not built by white people with multi-story buildings, and they burned them all down. They destroyed them. Like, they're basically ruins now because they were just constantly killing each other. So, and the Abyssinians were not like, they also weren't like blacks. They were kind of looked like, if you were to look at them, they would look like a dark skinned, like they kind of looked like, they didn't have the big fat bulbous features, right? They had like more streamlined aquiline features, but they had dark skin and their hair wasn't kinky. So they're kind of like Indian sort of type looking people or something like that. But they were, yeah. That's who used to be ruling class in Ethiopia, but then there's also like an underclass of just like black niggers there too. So anyway, I don't know. There's a lot of weird races in Africa. But so I don't know. We've done an hour and 20 minutes, so we can go ahead and end this.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's take
this
break.
I've got to find the I've got to find like the drops. This is always the problem. I don't actually have them. So here we are. I think I've got them here. Here's one. So we're going to take a little break and we will be back for next hour.
You're listening to TDS of the Right Stuff.
Doc Biz.
You're listening to TDS of the Right Stuff.
Doc Biz.
topic today is neo-Nazi Satanism. We're going to be talking to those of you who are neo-Nazi Satanist skinheads or Mansonites, followers of Charlie Manson and the family. That's right, if you are a neo-Nazi, a Satanist, a skinhead, or a Charlie Mansonite, I want you to pick up the phone right now and call me.
All right, so we're back. Our topic is not neo-Nazi Satanism. Actually, it is. Because we're talking about the FBI. So we are, in fact, talking about people that go out there and act like they are neo-Nazi Satanists. Now, the first thing I want to do is make fun of Ted Cruz a little bit. Now, Christopher Wray went in a few days ago over these FBI whistleblower leaks, talking about how they're overwhelmingly trying to reclassify or classify or just gin up these domestic violent extremist cases. Of course, the Republicans that made this an issue refused to tell you what type of domestic violent extremist they are talking about. Well, Merrick Garland is happy to tell you the kind he is talking about, and that is white, because they do not classify, despite all this hubbub and requirements of classifications of people as DVEs. They are not classifying Daryl Brooks as a DVE. Now, I would say that if I were grilling Christopher Wray, this would be a number one question I would ask him. And I would try and get him on the racial angle. That's the funny thing, is getting him on the racial angle, Republicans always want to go for the political angle. And I guess there's some merit to that. At least there's something going on. And maybe this is actually causing the FBI some problems. But I would say the real angle, because this is literally a civil rights violation, is if you are going out there, you're classifying, and if they ever complain against me or try and put me in jail, this is my strategy. This will be my strategy, FBI. So right now, if you ever want to go after me, what you should do is actually treat a black person as a domestic violent extremist terrorist. Like, you should actually make Daryl Brooks a terrorist, because that way you won't be vulnerable to the legal arguments I will make should you come after me. However, I know you, and you're going to leave yourself vulnerable to that. Now, of course, Daryl Brooks actually committed a terrorist act and killed people, and I have no intention of ever doing that, so you're going to have to be handicapped by that, first of all. But, so Ted Cruz is talking to Christopher Wray. I guess this was a few days ago. Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz. I guess Republicans generally, but these two particularly. And this is just stupid.
Let's see what kind of grandstanding Ted Cruz is.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Also included on this is a text that I was particularly struck, is the Gonzales battle flag. Come and take it. As indicative of being a violent extremist militia, well, I will self-report right now that every day in the Senate I wear my boots that have the Gonzales battle flag on the
back
of them.
Okay, now.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
He drives there in his pickup truck and he gets out
that
in his
is
cowboy
just
boots.
Like...
I feel like he should have on a 10-gallon hat for this interview.
Yeah, I mean, I think he does. I think he does go walking just around in like a cowboy hat and shit like that. Now, remember, Ted Cruz from Canada, and I don't even like to usually do that, but like, okay, so to come
like
and take
Yosemite
it,
Sam has to have a fucking pistol on each hip.
The other funny thing about this is, like, first of all, the Gonzales battle flag is not named because it was flown by somebody named Gonzales. It was flown because the Texas militia flew that to annoy the Mexican General Gonzales. In other words, they were like daring him, come and take our gun, we've got cannons here, come and take, or no, actually it was come and take the flag. And the point was, we've got cannons set up to defend ourselves, come and take this flag.
So did the Mexican general, did he label them a domestic violent extremist organization? And
no, I think he just fought them. I think he won. I think they won that. I don't know. I mean, they won some battles in that one, but they lost the overall battle. But in any case, it's sort of funny they name it after the Mexican, not after the actual white Texans. Because remember, the Texas-Mexican War was a race war. Because why else would you fight that war? Or like, what other reason would you have for fighting that war? Just because it's like, who's in charge of this area? Is it whites or is it Mexicans? It's going to be whites. And now, if you're just going to let them all in, what's the point of that? Why even bother? Anyway, I think Christopher Wray does like actually talk about this, though. So I am curious to see what... Because the fact of the matter is, now, Ted Cruz is a grandstanding asshole, but they do have stupid shit in their list of symbols that are indicative of sympathies or belonging to a domestic violent extremist organization. Among them is the Gonzales battle flag, as well as obviously the Gadsden flag, the Betsy Ross flag, obviously because Patriot Front likes the Betsy Ross flag, and a number of other such libertarian type. I wonder if they put the Palmia flag in there. I don't know. Probably that's in there too, although that's typically like a biker thing. I don't know if they bother with that. But so they've got a lot of those sort of classic liberty, live free or die type American symbols and such like that are all this shit.
That's like Americana culture stuff. Like, these are old cultural references, and you're just labeling that as domestic violent extremism.
Right. Right. Because, well, who's the culture of who? Is white people. This is white people stuff in America.
This guy's into Benjamin Franklin. I think he's a terrorist.
And it's not, it's like, it's all of it has the, all of it has that, like, typically American, like, fuck you, come get me type, you know, like, libertarian, like, my, like, castle doctrine, my land, my, you know, get the fuck off my lawn and my land. But it's like, at one point, that stuff was more respectable because it wasn't like, get off my lawn. It was like, hey, English, get the fuck out of our country, which is a hell of a lot more respectable. And it also shows you, as I've talked about, two different ideas of freedom, which get confused. Like, if you watch, now this is a cheesy Hollywood reference, but if you watch the movie Braveheart, when Mel Gibson is doing his thing where he's like, freedom! Right, where he's like screaming freedom. Is he talking about low taxes? Or is he talking about the Scottish aren't going to be ruled by the English? I think it's typically...
I think he's talking about reducing environmental regulations.
Yeah, I think he's. I think he doesn't want... He feels like the EPA is a bureaucracy that's just out of control. And it's basically become its own purpose, as bureaucracies always do.
I don't want to be forced to use an electric lawnmower. I agree. I want to use a gasoline-powered lawnmower.
I think he was talking about the fact that they banned that certain additive to dish soap that means you just can't get the streaks off anymore. Like that.
I didn't know they did that.
I guess you're not a Jeffrey Tucker fan, though.
Yeah.
You're not, Jeffrey Tucker made a big deal out of this. He's that like, I can't get so this much. Dish soap. Like, yeah. Well, he's not wrong, but in any case, that's like the classic idea of freedom. And when you go back not too long, and I would say pre-Reaganism, when you go pre-Reaganism and people talk about freedom, they don't mean low, like in some cases they might mean low taxes, but low taxes combined with the implication that like, we don't like the high taxes, not because of taxes as such, but because we are being taxed by a foreigner. Like, we were being taxed for the benefit of another nation, another race, another country. The English obviously aren't another race, but that's, that was considered an oppressing, occupying force. So that's typically what freedom means, is we're not being oppressed by an occupying force or a foreign people or a foreign government or a foreign state. We want to rule ourselves, and that's what is considered freedom, is like the self-rule. So, of course, the Jews, when they take over, they change the definition subtly over a course of many years to be like low taxes or get off my lawn rather than get out of my fucking country. I like get out of my country freedom rather than get off my lawn freedom. It's the same thing, basically. Just take that principle and expand it. And I think even when you look at a lot of this old school, like libertarian stuff that's referencing revolutionary times, it's not like don't tax me, bro. It's like, get the fuck out of my country. Which is definitely what they're saying to the Mexicans.
It's also like, how is that libertarian individualism? Is it seeing as how they deformed their own military organizations and create a state? Like,
right. I mean, the Ben Franklin flag literally says join or die. You can use that today. I mean, what he meant was that the colonies have to fight together in order to kick the British out. But you could say this to white people today.
Is that considered a domestic violent extremist propaganda
piece? Yes. That flag? That flag is absolutely in that list, 100%. I guarantee you it is. I mean, Stryker had the list. We were reading it off the other day, and I'm if that's not on there, I know Patriot Front also uses that one. I think that's, of all of the American nostalgia flags, that's the one I like best, because it's the one that actually is not pure individualism. It's like, we all have to join together to fight the British.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I like that one for an obvious reason. It's a snake. It's a snake that's been cut into pieces.
It's funny how Americans like this snake imagery, which is weird. But it's not because, like, the whole, like, don't tread on me and things like that. But let's see what Christopher Ray says here.
Director Ray, what are y'all doing?
Oh, of course, use the y'all.
This makes no sense.
What in the Sam Hill?
Do you agree with this FBI guidance that the Betsy Ross flag,
Putin guideline over
and
here,
the Gadsden flag and the Gonzales battle flag are signs of militia violent extremism?
Well, Senator, I'm not familiar with the particular.
Oh, shut the fuck up, faggot!
You, and I'm not in the practice of trying to comment on documents that I haven't.
Okay, now you're lying. Okay, now you've committed perjury.
I can't see what's in front of me. My eyeballs are a little fuzzy today. What are we talking about again?
Yeah, no, but it's like, bro, like, so you're the director of the FBI. Ted Cruz has been given a document. What's funny is he's not saying it's not legit. He's just saying I'm not familiar with it. Bullshit. Yeah. Bull fucking shit. Also, just go ahead and comment, you know, even if you never saw it before, what do you think?
At any point in this performance, is there an acknowledgement that the FBI can just do whatever they want and that Congress has no oversight over them at all?
Well, Congress has oversight. What they have oversight is their money. And that's why I challenge these guys, like, you know, Congressman, what was it, Bishop? Congressman Bishop that we showed the other day, and Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley. Cut their fucking funds. Just cut their budget. Next budget, say, not a dollar goes to the FBI. Not a dollar. None. Zero. Nothing. Nothing to the FBI. And we're not going to pass a budget unless that's the case. And yet,
No. Do a reverse budget. The FBI has to pay you now.
Yeah. In fact, make them pay you back. Be like, all this money you spent on investigating bullshit, yeah, you're going to owe, you owe that back. And we're going to send a check out to the people that you bugged, that you bothered. They're going to get reimbursed for that. But no. So these guys, again, I'm glad to see these FBI guys get up there and get grilled and be embarrassed and uncomfortable. However, we have to go further. It's time to defund. It is time to defund. Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley and a Congressman Bishop, I forgot that guy's full name, you must defund. You must not allow a dollar to go to the FBI in the next budget. Allocate that money instead to the U.S. Marshals and let them follow up with whatever investigations the FBI was doing in child porn or whatever. Or, sorry, CSAM or interstate commerce, or, you know, interstate drug trafficking or whatever. They hand that over to the U.S. Marshals. They can deal with that. They can deal with that. They can hire more people to deal with those actual crimes. But this FBI shit, it's out of control. It's clearly run by a bunch of libtards that have completely been subverted, that don't respect. Basically, we'll actually try and, I mean, I think if you gave the FBI full leeway, they would literally just try and destroy the Republican Party itself, because they're actually that dumb and they're that partisan. But that's because, like, the problem is when you hire all libtards, when you purge your organization, you don't even have the token conservative to keep you, like, on track. Or even a Jew, like, this is the other problem. Like, Jews would know better than to do this, because Jews need conservatives. They need them. But if you make an agency like all libtards, well, they don't understand that. They just want to go after people they hate and think that they're justified in doing it. So
yeah, it's interesting how the secret police type thing is just always an emergent element in these kinds of states. And it's always populated with the same people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's sort of funny because we were talking about the kid that betrayed his dad or whatever. And that's not the only time that's happened. That's just the most recent one, the Reffitt family. And how this is something that does, this is not actually characteristic of, they all say, oh, this is Nazis. But like I said, I want to know of a case that people know of where this happened in Nazi Germany. Because as far as I know, I've never heard of it. There might be one or two, but this is really what happens with Jews. I mean, it was happening in the Soviet Union, and now it happens here. It seems to be a thing that happens with Jewish rule, is that they get you to turn on your own. Because, of course, that's the Jewish strategy. Is getting their competing groups to turn on their own. It's literally how they... That's literally their ethnic racial supremacy strategy. And those that buy into
it... Yeah, or to get your elite to identify with them. Be another strategy.
Yeah. And then to get like non-elites like this Reffitt kid. That kid's no elite. That kid's he's like a working-class dad from Texas. He's no elite. He wants to be one. He thinks he is. And how do you do it? Well, I turn on my own people. That's how I get privileges in this system. It's like, good job, kid. Well done. So let's see what Christopher Wray says.
But I will tell you that when we put out intelligence products, including ones that reference symbols.
Did he say intelligence products?
Yes. A wide variety of contexts.
Do you get excited for next intelligence product?
Make great.
Well, just it's really weird to me.
All I say is consume intelligence product
and capitalist terminology. Just
yeah, I know they do use discussion. This all the time. Yeah, it permeates everything, even intelligence bureaucracy.
Intelligence products. Who are you selling intelligence to?
Themselves to us, to everybody.
I mean, last time I checked, you're taxpayer funded. What is the product?
The product is that document. I mean, I guess you could say product is anything that you produce, but obviously there's the connotation there is it's something on sale in a store.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's just let him go here.
We put out intelligence products, including ones that reference symbols, which we do across a wide variety of contexts. We usually make great pains, to put
you are a great pain.
Warnings in the document that make clear that a symbol alone is not considered evidence of violent extremism.
Okay, but what? I mean, who cares?
What is the implication, though? I mean, if it's in your document, it's implied that there's something nefarious afoot because it's in your intelligence document.
But see, the thing is, you don't need to accuse. This is where the lie comes in, right? They don't need. In fact, most of the people they investigate, they don't accuse of anything. What they do is they investigate them, scare them, and make them stop doing whatever activism they're doing. Because it's political. They don't actually need to arrest you as long as they get you to shut the fuck up. And if you're, flying the Gonzalez flag or whatever, Gadsden flag or whatever libertarian flag you want to fly, and you get a little knock on the door, hi, I'm Mr. FBI agent, or even if you just find out that your buddy did or that they're even looking for that shit, well, you're gonna, it's the chilling effect, as they say. It's really like the no chill effect, because the FBI has no chill. But yeah, so it's by the act of saying these things are, and also you bias the public against them when this stuff comes out, if it does, that I see, because you know now that there's cat ladies out there, because a lot of this stuff is cat lady fanfic stuff, right? So you know there's cat ladies out there that they see, a Gadsden flag, and they fucking freak out, and they get all mad, and they start trying to think of ways that they can, report the person who lives in that home and make their life hell. You know, some ways, is there a way I can do something really petty and underhanded to inconvenience this person who has a flag I don't like? Let me see. Let me try any way I can. I feel justified doing that, because I'm a cat lady. But, so apparently we got Hawley also grilled Ray, and apparently he had some more intelligent things to say.
Did he talk about his boots?
I don't think that's the kind of stuff that Josh Hawley
does. Did he stand up out of his chair and he starts pointing at his boots?
Yeah, I mean, that's just like Ted Cruz. Can you just be serious for once? Can you just be a serious person? apparently not, right? See, Hawley, who I'm not going to, again, I'm suspicious of this guy as I am of anybody. But I will say that he presents a hell of a lot better. So let's see what he has to say.
Let's talk a little bit about it. Why is the FBI attempting to audit concealed carry permit records in the state of Missouri?
So I guess the first thing I would say is we will get you a longer, more
we'll get that to you. They always do this
response
one.
To your letter.
No, you won't.
I am generally familiar with the kind of audits that we're talking about, so I can give you a little information now, but we will follow up with you in writing to give you a full answer to your letter.
Well, they might even do it, but it'll just be more
audits that we're talking about are routine audits that are conducted by our CGIS division, which also encompasses NICS, among other things. These are audits.
Wait, NICS, not only do we have NIBRS?
Don't be talking in acronyms here.
Not only do we have NIBRS?
We're not doing death by acronym. Define what you mean by NICS.
Is that something? Is that something like NIBRS?
I'm assuming it's NICS, not the TV show.
Oh, that's what that is. Is it NIGS?
National Instant Criminal Background Check System.
Okay, yeah. So it is sort of like NIBRS. Does the FBI doesn't use NIBRS? No, the FBI does use NIBRS, but apparently NIBRS doesn't really work. So that's why we have no stats.
Well, let's see where he goes with this. I'm assuming he's going to say that it's an audit to make sure that that information being collected by the national whatever the fuck background check system matches what is actually on file or something. I don't know.
It's probably some bullshit.
That's what it kind of sounds.
Do not with agents. There are no agents out talking to people. They are routine audits of the system to make sure the system is being used properly.
Okay.
And they do that at the direction of an advisory policy board that is manned with not just FBI agents, frankly, not just federal law enforcement, but state and local law enforcement from all over the country. And so these audits go on. They look at small samples in order to make sure the system's being used properly. They're not focused on individuals or their Second Amendment rights or anything like that. And in fact, these audits, which go on, as I said, you know, every 3 years, I think, is the cycle. We had one in your home state in 2018, for example, and I think it was very uneventful, and I would expect this one to be as well.
You're correct that there was one in 2018, and what the sheriffs of Missouri say in 2018 is that the FBI did not request concealed carry records. You are requesting it this year. In the state of Missouri, only the sheriffs have these concealed carry.
Hold on a second. This is what I'm a little confused by. So they're checking concealed carry permit holders, but he's saying this is connected to the background check system, which would be like for handgun purchases and rifle purchases and things like that. Why are these two things connected?
Well, that's that's what the senator's asking him. So he's basically saying, like, you're looking into people that have that have these permits inherently. And he's like, yeah, well, I just want to make sure the system is working properly. Well,
but that's not NICS, to my understanding. Instant Criminal Background Check System, that, as far as I know, only applies to firearms or and the explosives, too, I suppose.
Right. It's like, presumably, if you've got a concealed carry permit, you've passed that.
What would that have to do with somebody in, I don't know, West Virginia getting a concealed carry permit?
Right. Also, like,
because here's the thing. You can get a concealed carry permit and not even have a fucking gun.
Right. No, they're clearly just to create. They're literally what they're doing is they're creating a list of leads. They're building a list of leads. They need domestic violent extremists. They have internal. Now, here, this video says Senator Hawley blasts Ray about Missouri concealed carry audit's failure to vet Afghans. So let me see if I can find something where he talks about just some of the other stuff, because that's not quite as interesting as some of this other stuff. I mean, that's okay, but okay, so here we have, see, the problem is, this is a fucking, oh my God, we got the whole testimony that's 3 hours. I don't think I want that. I just want some actually good stuff from Hawley. So, let me see this. We got Hawley and the investigation into January 6th. Now, that's from a few days ago. Let's go. Here's FBI. So, we've got Hawley confronts FBI over controversial report. I think there's some other stupid shit in this video that is, not stuff. Okay, here we go. I got it when it starts. When this dumb anchor person shuts the fuck up. So let's see here.
Record, and I'll now recognize the senator from Missouri, Senator Hawley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Ray, I sent you a letter last week about the FBI's decision to try to obtain sensitive personal information.
Okay, this is, again, concealed carry permits. What the heck? Let's see.
My limited understanding as we sit here right now, not having a chance to drill into it more deeply, but is that that under Missouri state law, checks for concealed carry permits are run using one of those systems that CJIS administers. So in order to be able to determine that the system is being used properly, consistent with the audit, consistent with the direction of the advisory.
Why are all these videos about this? Don't get me wrong, that's interesting, but I want to see.
It's actually making me very interested in how they do it in Missouri, because a lot of states, mm-hmm. it's just the local sheriff does it. On the fly. Concealed carry. What video are you looking for?
I just want, apparently, there's videos of these guys. There's videos of these guys questioning them on this FBI whistleblower. And he starts, Hawley, Ray was questioned for 3.5 hours, okay? And Hawley was one of the ones grilling him hardest, and he he's basically grilling him on, why are you looking into Missouri residents? He's a Missouri senator, like, concealed carry permit. So we can watch a little bit more of that just to sort of see Christopher Wray, like...
Yeah, I'm curious now. I want to see where he goes with it.
All right. Let's bring up the other one. Where was it? Okay. We can watch more of this.
Carry records, because Missouri law explicitly forbids concealed carry permit information to be turned over to state officials or to federal officials for reasons that you can surely understand. We've seen recently what's happened in California, for instance, when gun owners are exposed, their personal information put out into the public record. So I just want to understand why it is the FBI is now seeking from our sheriffs, and we're talking about multiple sheriffs who have contacted me, who have contacted other state officials, who have spoken to the press, saying that the FBI is now asking for the names of concealed carry permit holders in the state of Missouri. Why is that? If you've not done it before, I don't understand.
Well, again, I'm going to have to look deeper into to give you a more fulsome answer to your question. My understanding, my limited understanding as we sit here right now, not having a chance to drill into it more deeply, but is that that under Missouri state law, checks for concealed carry permits are run using one of those systems that CJIS administers. So in order to be able to determine that the system is being used properly, consistent with the audit, consistent with the direction of the Advisory Policy Board, I think that may explain the answer. But let me follow up with you more detail in writing.
Okay, so you can confirm, though, it sounds like you're saying that indeed the FBI is asking for records, because you just said that would be the reason for requesting this information.
I don't know that for a fact. But that's what I've
come
heard.
On now.
Maybe part of may explain the disconnect, but I'm
what
not
do you
well
know? Heard from. Oh, he has no shit.
Yeah, apparently he doesn't know that much because I just checked.
People. Yeah, apparently yes, the director of the FBI doesn't know a damn thing.
You do, whenever you're renewing your permit, you do pay a fee because they're using the NICS system.
Yeah.
So
you actually think that this is the general gist of Hawley's questioning? Because this guy was questioned for 3.5 hours.
Still, just the fucking dishonesty.
No, it's still good. I mean, it's
dodging, like, I don't think I can answer this very obvious question here.
I mean, it's also like...
Do they not get tired of just being constantly stonewalled by the FBI every time they have these fucking hearings?
I mean, yeah, no. I don't think they do, honestly. I mean, I don't know what they do or don't, but it seems to me that they're willing to, like, let it happen. Because I'm saying, again, the response here is you defund this agency, right? Like, and if they're going after your constituents, then, like, you should
what
just
kind of
do
oversight
it
does this fucking agency have?
Well, this is it. Like, occasionally they get to... they have these grillings. Now, I think what's going to happen here is, with this stuff... Well, I mean, I'm actually kind of curious now about his questions on the failure to vet Afghans. Because that seems to be... he's doing a hypocrisy bingo. Which, again, I never tire of hypocrisy bingo. In fact, I think hypocrisy bingo is the game we play to win.
What is the thing on the Afghans? I'm not familiar.
He says, the video says, he questions them on concealed carry audits, failure to vet Afghans. So all I think right. What he's going to say
play
is
that.
You're so worried about, well, I'm just going to let the video play. He said, I think what he's going to say is you're so worried about this DVE ship, but you don't even look at these Afghans coming in. You're not even investigating these refugees that you're bringing in. So.
People within our organization, yes.
Okay.
I'm trying to, in the middle of everything else, trying to unpack what exactly is going on with the dust.
Right, because, I don't know anything.
Yeah. Well, you say in the middle of everything else. You can understand, I hope, why this would be of significance to the people of Missouri.
Absolutely, and that's why I've committed to you that we will make sure we get you a detailed
this
response.
This is such bullshit.
What could you possibly be doing? I mean, with...
Wait, what does Holly say? I think this is pretty good, right?
Response in writing.
What could you possibly be doing, I mean, with the personal information of these individuals? Let me ask it this way. Are you doing this in other states as well? Are you going to other states and asking for concealed records, concealed carry permit records in other states too? Or is it just Missouri?
I know we are doing audits, these routine audits in some other states, but I don't know. I think it's a function of different state laws as to what exactly is within scope in terms of the use of the system.
Why are you asking for it now from the state of Missouri, from our sheriffs, when you didn't ask for it in the past?
Again, I'm going to have to get more information to be able to provide you a written response to your letter.
I think that this should be shut down. This idea of, because they do this a lot, like, I can't answer you now, but I'll write you a letter later. They do this all. I've seen this many. I look at all the testimonies like this.
I've seen it too.
And I'm like, no.
I mean, presumably they're doing an audit. Did I assume what you would do is you look up an individual and you check to see if they actually have a criminal record that would have made them ineligible for a concealed carry permit.
But presumably that would have been done at the time they got the permit.
Right. But
so what are you also doing?
It sounds like something that the FBI doesn't have to do that the local state authorities could do.
Well, the local state authorities did it.
Yeah.
Well, and the FBI is like, give us that information. And apparently the state of Missouri passed a law saying you can't do that.
Are they saying their own database is potentially corrupt? Like, what the fuck? I don't get it.
Well, is there a big problem with concealed carry permit owners in Missouri, not to mention other states being... Because again, people that have that shit are not the people that commit gun crimes. In fact, I would love to see some data on this. You know, and they probably exist someplace and they've never put it out. What is the status? People that commit gun crimes and gun murders, to the extent you even fucking know who it is, and what is the legal status of that gun in relationship to the individual and the shooting and all that stuff? And are we dealing with now, oftentimes when there's one of these mass shootings where a person goes and like stocks up on shit and then does the mass shooting, they make a point of saying this person got these guns legally. And I'm like, all right, but like when you're talking about people that have concealed carry permits, which is something that takes a little bit of time investment to get, I think, in almost any state, how many of these people are doing these mass shootings or crimes at all?
It takes a place? And a lot of times that require you, it's more than just a background check. A lot of times you have to actually pass like a safety course.
Yeah, you've got to take a course from gun instructor
and
or something like that.
It's not just a rubber stamp. Like, you can fail the course.
Right.
People do.
Right. And theoretically, you know, you can go and buy a normal gun, no problem. Even in New York State, you can still do that if you're outside of New York City. It's obvious what they're doing. What I think they're doing is they're creating a list, like the Glengarry leads, right? You know, like they're creating a list of leads for their agents to go and bother these people, because what they're going to do is be like, okay, we've got concealed carry. They're just looking for people who are any indicator of somebody being more right wing than the norm. And an indicator like that would be someone with a concealed carry permit is going to be more right wing than average. Somebody with one of these symbols, one of these type of patriotic, old school patriotic symbols, is going to be more right wing than average. So now let's see, do we have somebody who is one of these patriotic symbols on their home and has a concealed carry permit? Okay, well now we've got a stronger lead. Now let's see if we can find another indicator. Right? And it's all political. All of it's political. None of the things that are going to be leading them to down their route of investigation are going to be things like actually committing crimes.
Well, I believe what happened in California, and I may be slightly mistaken here, but I think that what occurred is they essentially had a registry of people owning various firearms, and they changed firearm laws, and then they started sending ATF agents around to see if the residents who owned those guns had actually done what was supposed to be done with them, as in it could have been like a different type of assault weapons ban where you're not supposed to have a certain magazine or
which is what Hawley was referencing when he said like California.
Yeah, and it was like, well, we have a list and we know where to go find you and check and make sure that you're complying with our new regulations.
Right, which is, again, when you do that, what do you make somebody, you know, not want to do this stuff anymore?
Yeah.
And like they know that, like, a lot of times, you know, people get scared when the FBI visits them for good reason, because it's a scary thing to have happen, and they understand that, and they aren't even looking to make an arrest or even have some kind of valid investigation. They literally, all they want you to do is get scared. Like, I remember this happened a while ago in a place that doesn't exist to someone that never actually lived on this earth, where I took a flight someplace. And the guy that picked me up at the airport and then drove me to my hotel went back to his house, and FBI agents were waiting for him there. Yeah. I mean, this never really happened, of course. This is imaginary. But yeah, he just said, like, nah, go, like, get the hell out of here, right? And then they left. But it was like, why did they do that? Well, they did that because they were hoping that guy would then be like, you know what, Mike, like, fuck you. I can't hang out with you anymore. It's too dangerous. Bye. And, that was what they were hoping would happen out of that. They didn't have any crimes that this person was not, there's nothing like that, right? Purely was just intimidation. Purely intimidation. Anyway. So let's keep going here.
What steps would the FBI take to make sure the information remains private if you're able to obtain it from these sheriffs all across Missouri?
Well, it's not private.
The same
like,
answer.
I would say inherently, the risk here is not that like the public gets this information, but like that the feds are the risk factor for the individual. Like the person with the concealed carry permit, the risk is not this information being public. The risk is the feds having this information. That's where you don't want
right.
to have.
Why do we have a secret police that's running around doing this?
Right. Like it's not even like you give a fuck. Fuck, I can see somebody with a concealed carry permit like bragging to their neighbors that they've got it, right?
It's very strange to me to be an American and just hear all of this rhetoric. But we have secret police.
Yes.
We have secret police in this country and no one's doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
They cry about communism all day long, but they have the KGB.
Worse.
Yeah.
Worse. I remember one time I used that term to talk about them, and my libtarded stepmom like corrected me, and she was very upset by the fact that I used the term "secret police" to talk about the FBI. She was like, "Well, no," and I was like, "No," but I was like, "But listen, it fills the same role.
It's the secret police.
Like every government does it." This is
what else do you want me to call them?
Right. No, they want you to keep up the pretense. That's like saying, that's like literally saying it's not the secret police. It's like the state security officer. Yeah, that's the same fucking thing. It's like, what is Stasi? Stands for like state security, something, something, something.
It's like,
no, they're not secret police.
Like, it's like the whole RICO thing. It's essentially Stasi. We have a list of individuals, and we want to find some way to ensnare and trap these people and do something to them. Not because of any specific crime they've done, but because they got on our radar, and we don't like them, and we need to take them out.
We don't like their politics. We don't like
that's the way it is now.
Yeah.
Prior to that, it was, we've got these mobsters, and we want to take them out.
Well, at least with them, it was actual crimes.
It's like, we're not investigating a specific crime that they've done. We're investigating the individual himself, which is not at all how this legal system is supposed to work.
Right. And the
he makes a point. Crimes, not individuals, right?
He makes a point. Ray always in these interviews, because I've seen him get grilled like several times now. He always says like we don't investigate individuals or ideologies. We investigate crime and terrorism. It's like, no, you don't. You literally do not do that.
You have legal tools to allow you to prosecute people individually.
You've always had them. Like, terror attacks are illegal, so you don't need anything more. Yes, but the funny thing is, it's like, I love the idea that it's not secret police, it's FBI. No, it's the secret police. Literally, you could say Stasi or NKVD and whatever those stand for, it's not, those don't literally mean secret police in those languages, right? They mean something else. Something that sounds like Federal Bureau of Investigation or state security agents. You know, it's like, okay, so Stasi, that's not secret police, my friend. That's just state security. Okay. Oh, that clears. You're right. You know, here I was. Silly me. I thought this was like someone who was a political enforcer for the government. I guess I was wrong. Sorry.
I want to be careful not to speak when I don't have all the facts.
Okay.
Do you have any facts?
Well,
no, I am going to answer your question. We're just
not answering them now.
Not here, because I don't.
Yeah, I'm just not going to answer them here.
And because you're not prepared to answer them. I'm disappointed, okay. Frankly. Hold on.
That was actually a good own. That was actually a very good own. Hold on.
So you're not going to answer my questions. Well,
I am going to answer your question.
You're not answering them now.
Not here, because I don't have the answer.
Well, because you're under oath and because you're not prepared to answer them. I'm disappointed, frankly. I sent you this letter days ago. This has been on your radar screen. The Attorney General of our state sent you a letter before that. You've known about this. This is of significant concern. It directly affects Missouri state law. You can understand the position. You've praised your local law enforcement partners earlier today, Director. You're putting them in a terrible position in the state of Missouri. State law says they cannot turn over these personal records. The sheriffs cannot. You are asking them to. Apparently, in an unprecedented fashion, they've not been asked this before. I want to know what in the world you're doing with it.
So he's asking them to break the law.
Sounds like it.
He's asking them to do something illegal.
I wish Christopher Ray would explain how this audit is supposed to work.
Hmm. Well, it's a routine audit.
All right. Well, what are you doing with it?
Routinely checking into the system.
Yeah, that's how you described it, is the system, but okay.
We have a system. Let me explain. So we've got a system And we do routine audits of it. And that's probably what you're seeing here. I hope that clears it up.
But how does the audit work?
Again, like, routine audit of the system, we have to routinely audit it to make sure it's working. Well, the audit works that we try and get some dumb teenager to do a mass shooting. Ultimately, that's how we know. That's how we know the system is spinning at all cylinders.
Could you give me an example of an audit that failed and what that looked like?
Yeah, give me a use case. Can you give me? Yeah. can you walk me through a use case? Like, say you've got you're auditing, you're getting like what red flags come up? Like, what information is being compared to what? Like, give me an example of when you do the audit, when you catch something. What do you have there? Yeah, what are you looking at? What are you getting? What are you? Well, again, these parameters, the parameters of any individual audit sort of depend on the who's doing the audit and what information they're looking for, and I don't have that information right now. I could send you a letter when I find out. But again, it's a very complicated thing, and as the director of the FBI, I don't know shit. My job is to not know anything. Literally, that seems to be his job. Yeah, well, let me. As the guy who's directly answerable to Congress, my job is not to know anything at all.
Can you direct me to someone who does know?
I don't know who that would be, because again, I don't have any information here. I could send you a letter when I find out. I'll look into it. And I can maybe send you a letter.
Email me the phone number of the guy who knows.
Well, I can't use email. That's not secure. We've had instances of feds when they've like gone to bother people, and they want to trip you up on anything. We had instances of them saying to the person something like, "Well, can I count on you getting back to me, say, next week?" And I'm like, "Never answer any question at all. That's a question." I'm like, "Yeah, nah, I'm not gonna promise shit, buddy." Because like
you need to just talk like their own director does.
Yeah, talk.
No, I don't really have any information about next week. I'll have to get back to you on that, and I can't tell you when I can get back to you on next week.
Wow, this could be. I mean, what's the time? What's the date? Things are schedule is wow summer. Ooh,
I'm doing an audit next week. I don't know if that's going to be a good time for me.
I mean, what's next season? Autumn. Autumn. That's busy. September's bad. A lot going on. So, yeah, I mean, I don't even recommend talking like their own director, because I would recommend just not talking at all. Just don't say shit. Don't say a damn thing, because he at least is supposed to answer questions, because he's been called into a hearing. He's got to fill them with bullshit. But I would just, you don't owe them shit. Don't even answer like Chris Ray. Just don't say anything. Just sit there looking at him. Like,
does Christopher Ray say anything intelligible at any point in this interview? I'm just curious if he puts anything on the table
here. I mean, it would be a chore to watch all 3.5 hours, but it might actually become... You might at some point be... You could do like the drinking game.
You'd think after 3.5 hours, he'd just be worn down and he might...
No, man, that's his fucking job. His job is to endure that and just repeat bullshit. Like, that's what these bureaucrats... That's what they really are there for. So I would say, like... You could do the Christopher Ray drinking game. You could do two different ones. One, every time he evades, you drink, and you'll just die of alcohol poisoning. Or you could do every time he answers a question with a response, he actually provides an answer to the question asked. You could drink, and in which case, you will be stone cold sober. So that, you know, you play the game where you roll a dice which one you've got, and the guy who's got the... I will drink when he's responsive. He's the designated driver for the night, because you know, he's going to be dead sober. So, yeah.
This, and frankly, I don't like the fact that the FBI is snooping around the concealed carry permit records of Missourians. I don't like it at all. I don't know what you want to do with it. I don't know what you're going to do with
Let's
the information.
Be honest. We know,
but I don't like that you're putting our sheriffs in this position, and I'm disappointed that you're not ready to answer my questions. Let me ask you about something else. Afghan refugees. The FBI is involved, you have said in the past, your agency has said in the past, in helping to vet refugees who were brought here after the botched evacuation by this administration out of Afghanistan. I'm sure you're aware that the DOD Inspector General has said that earlier this year that there are at least 50 Afghan personnel who were brought to the United States who in fact had derogatory information, could be a terrorist, could be involved in terrorist activities. 50 of them who have been brought here, released into the United States, can't now be found. That information was turned over to you.
Oh.
I understand DOD gave you that information, asked you to help track down these 50 individuals. Here's my question. A whistleblower has now come forward to Senator Johnson and myself and alleged that the situation is actually far graver than that. According to this whistleblower's allegations, there are 324 individuals who are evacuated from Afghanistan and allowed to enter the United States despite appearing on DOD's biometrically enabled watch list. This is a watch list that identifies folks whose biometrics have been collected and determined to be threats or potential threats to national security, including known suspected terrorists. So this whistleblower says it's a lot more than 50, it's 324. Are you aware of this? Has DOD or DHS communicated this to the FBI?
I don't know that I have the exact number. I know that there are a number of individuals through our Joint Terrorism Task Forces that we are actively trying to investigate as a result of the
evacuation. How many?
Again, I don't know if I can get you the number, but I will see what we can get you as a follow-up.
Nearly 400 individuals now who apparently have been brought to this country despite having some connection to terrorism, have you interviewed any of them? Have you apprehended any of them?
I know there have been a number of interviews of individuals who came, lots of interviews, frankly, of individuals who came as part of the evacuation. I think there have been a number of disruptions. How many of those have been arrests, under what charges and so forth, that I'd have to get back to you on.
Disruption.
Last thing, Mr. Chairman, the whistleblower is...
What does a disruption mean?
Yeah. What is that euphemism signifying?
Yeah, what are you talking about? What was disrupted? Like, disruptions meaning, like, they were found out?
They were arrested? It doesn't sound like they were arrested.
Disruption. That's a very interesting word for
disrupted these. Their dinner? You sent an agent over there to harass them while they were eating dinner?
Well, disrupted the fact that this information got out, disrupted your plan? it disrupted what you were doing somehow? But, I mean, it's sort of funny because what I would do, now maybe he does this, maybe Josh Hawley does this, is to kind of bring it home, like, so you've got 384 direct terrorism leads here, right? You got leads on people in the country connected to terrorism as you define it. As you define it. As the federal government defines it. And you seem to not be doing shit. Yet you are bothering people that have concealed carry permits in the state of Missouri, for one thing, among others. I mean, you are bothering... I know for a fact they are bothering people that are connected with white nationalism. They're not doing anything to them. They're just bothering them. People who you know, again, this is no secret. And the effort here is obviously to scare people away from these type of politics. I mean, they consider it a win. If they show up at your house, scare you, scare your wife, kick your dog, scare your kids. And then your wife is screeching at you, like, you can't be involved in this stuff anymore. It's too much of a risk, our family. And, you know, there are going to be some people that are going to respond to that. Some people are going to be like, yeah, fuck you. And some people are going to be like, oh, shit, I can't blow my marriage. And I understand that. Like, I'm not even saying that's... Like, I understand why somebody would do that. What I accuse the FBI of doing is, like, to them, that's a win. Right? That's a win. If someone's like, okay, now I'm backing off. I thought for a second I was going to be able to actually... You know, in America, you know, literally, I thought this was America. And it's not even like I thought this was America. I can, like, take a shit and piss on the street and, like, jack off. You actually can do that. Like, whatever that guy...
You know, apparently, the issue is domestic violent extremists, not foreign violent extremists.
Right. I mean...
So if you're a foreign violent extremist, you're fine.
Yeah, right. If you're an Afghan violent extremist... In fact, also, not only that, it's not even domestic. It's white. If you're a nigger, you're fine, too. Like, I would love, dearly would love to have been one of these senators able to grill this guy and been like, so, in all your search for a domestic violent extremist, why is it that Daryl Brooks, the Waukesha murderer, racial murderer, even if you don't want to acknowledge it was a racial murder, it was a terror attack, why has he not been designated as a domestic violent extremist?
Yeah, why does he get less interest from the FBI than just, I don't know, some guy living in the woods somewhere?
Yeah. Or why me. Just or me and probably you.
People that are What is the kind of language they like to use? Like a low chance of violence or something? Low risk for domestic violent extremism?
Yeah.
It's low risk. Not low, zero.
Well, those are the people they want
not
to definitely.
Not zero.
Right. Yeah, non-zero risk. But I would say that could almost apply to anybody. But like,
but
also,
it does. That's the point.
Right. Except it could actually, no. You know who's at zero risk of domestic violent extremism? Jews and blacks. They have zero risk. There's just no possible way they could be. Because even when they do it, they apparently niggers have zero fucking risk of being a domestic violent extremist. Because even when they do terrorist attacks, they just aren't violent. They're just not violent extremists. There's not. All right. That seems to be officially, at least from the FBI's action, they consider blacks to be zero risk. So this is almost got like a minute left. Let's see how he wraps this up.
Anything else?
It's also alleged that political appointees to the National Security Council and at DOD instructed agency personnel to cut corners when they were processing Afghan evacuees.
Of course.
And rather than administer fingerprint tests on all 10 fingers, for instance, to abbreviate those tests in order to promote rushed evacuation, they also alleged that personnel at DHS who worked on vetting Afghan refugees had been authorized to delete old biometric data whenever they personally want to. Obviously, these are very troubling allegations. Are you aware of this behavior at DHS and DOD?
I'm not familiar with the report that you're referring to. I will say that this was a massive number of people to be vetting in an extraordinarily short period of time, and that in my view, inevitably raises concerns.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right about that. Inevitably raises concerns, I think, is the
but
nice.
But I would say, like, all right, I mean, again, he did kind of, like, ask him about something that other agencies were doing, which actually, for the once, gives him the funny thing is, he actually has a total easy way in that circumstance to say, those are other agencies, I don't know. Like, he could, like, legitimately say that, and he doesn't. And then he says, like, well, I'll agree with you, those are concerns. But it's like, here, I got a way to vet Afghan refugees. Are you an Afghan refugee? Yes. Okay, you don't get in.
It's funny that they're doing away with. I guess they're
you just
they're
don't come to America. Sorry.
And when I did background checks for various EMS positions, they would do that full thing. Like you get the full every fingerprint on your hand, both hands.
Really?
It was very exhaustive. But I suppose if you're an Afghan national that just got brought over here, you know, why bother?
Right. And of course, as we know, because we know we understand the politics of the situation, people that are like legitimately connected to things like ISIS and Al-Qaeda are going to be the people that are coming, that are going to be the ones that are like leaving Afghanistan when the Taliban takes back over. Like those are the kinds of, they're saying they killed this Zawahiri guy. And, you know, they're saying, okay, he took up residence in Kabul. I saw this fucking headline from this kid who was in the army and then he went to do like humanitarian work in Afghanistan. And he says the last few years there, you know, he wasn't working for the military or anything. He was working for some agent state U.S. maybe USAID or something like that. And they lived in this house and he was like, yeah, it just became like a frat house because now get this. This is what's funny. He was like, we basically couldn't leave. He said, we couldn't leave. They're recognizably American, meaning they're racially not Afghans. They're either black or white, probably. Therefore, recognizably not Afghan. Don't speak the language. I guarantee you doesn't speak, you know, Urdu or whatever they speak over there. And are just recognizably foreign. And they just can't leave their house. Like, the government set up like it. So they're here. They're doing aid work. But then it turns out they can't do any aid work. So they just stay in their house. So he said it became a frat house, like, party atmosphere. Like, we were drinking all day. And I'm like, how the fuck? And he's like, and of course, we were able to get out. He says it as, like, a matter of course. I mean, how'd you get alcohol in Afghanistan? I didn't think that they drank there. Or maybe once the Taliban, definitely, I think, it doesn't let people do that. But, like, maybe they were able to get alcohol once the new, you know, liberal, lip-tarted government came in. I'm like, so you basically, American taxpayers are paying for you to stay in, like, a mansion in Kabul and, like, just party all day. Because if you even go outside, like, you'll get killed by the Afghans. Like, they'll kill you. Funny thing is, this is not the first time this happened. It's actually happened to the British in 1840s. 1840s, they were like in Kabul living in mansions and stuff. And at some point, the Afghans just broke in and actually just murdered them.
Yeah.
Which, again, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, well, you knew that was a risk going in, so. But yeah. So that was actually, the funny thing is, the reason the guy was saying that is because that's the same mansion that they fucking droned to kill this Zawahiri guy. Which is sort of funny, and I was even wondering if it's even, like, true. Because, it's like, why would he be there? But, you know, who the fuck knows? But it's also, like, to me, that was basically Biden trying to do some kind of flex. Or get, like, repair his image somehow. Because, you know, he's the least popular president in history. Like, literally, he's less popular. You're talking about how Donald Trump's ratings were, like, the worst. Biden's ratings are worse. And so, you know, but it's like, it seems to me like droning an Al-Qaeda agent and making a big deal out of it is like, you're talking 20, this is like a 20-year-old playbook. Like, I don't know if that hits like it used to. Or I don't think anyone, frankly, I don't think anyone cares. I actually don't think anyone gives a shit. Because you want to dredge up memories of 9/11, more than half of the country thinks the government did that.
So I had another video related to FBI investigations that I've put in there. You only got to like, I think 5:45-ish, 5:40.
Yeah, I'm there. Start. So let's see. So this is some hillbilly guy, some mountain.
This man. He goes by the name Forrest Annan. As near as I can tell, he just does woodland content about how he lives off the grid
in the woods
and plays with squirrels and things like that all day long.
Squirrels. Oh, okay. So this bro is just in the woods guy.
Yeah, and he was investigated for seven and a half months by the FBI. Okay. They hassled his family. They hassled him about stuff. They basically looked up people he hadn't even talked to in like 5 years
and
asked them questions.
They were unable to locate these 400 terrorists. I mean, just as an example.
Right.
They seem to be completely in the dark about these supposed like terrorists from Afghanistan that, you know.
They compiled apparently thousands of pages on this guy.
Seems like they've got a lot of time. I mean, seems like they got a lot of time on their hands, because this guy, I'm just looking at him, I'm like, this guy's not going to murder people.
Like, what he's holding in his hands is a printout of just part of the report that they had on, because I think he did a FOIA request and part of it, and of course it's heavily redacted. But
so when I look at this, I'm like, I'm looking at this guy. And he's not setting off, like, alarm bells in my head. There's nothing about this guy that's making me think, oh, yeah, that's a danger. Like, in fact, if I were in the woods and I were lost and this guy, like, I saw this guy, like, wandering around, I'd be like, can you please help me? Like, you seem like someone who knows what they're doing. You seem safe because you're, like, you know, white.
Yeah, well, what he's reading here is a report on himself.
Yeah, so this is him reading his own FBI report. So let's see what we got here.
The revolution was detrimental to humankind. He vehemently disagreed with the violence carried out by the Unabomber to achieve change. He believed in peace, not violence. Manuel was asked about his interest in books that have inspired Ted Kaczynski. He said that he disagreed with Kaczynski's actions, but believed in the idea of anti-technology because technology was ruining society. He said with sincerity and emphasis, "I am not the Unabomber." He was a very strong believer in God and was Catholic.
Well,
he reiterated that he may have made comments against Israel, a country that was pro-war. Manuel was anti-war, so his comments against Israel may have been misconstrued as pro-Nazi. He could only guess that people projected their beliefs of what they think his beliefs were based solely on his lifestyle. And that's
okay, so hold on a second. first of all, a couple of things here. One... Now, this is a rhetorical question. I know the answer to it, but rhetorical questions are always fun. Why does the FBI give a shit what person's views on Israel are?
Right, right. Why does he have to clarify that he doesn't have some sort of animus against Israel? He's critical of their foreign policy.
Well, why is that even something that's brought up? Because, like, first of all, Israel is a country that's pro-war. That's true. So as an anti-war activist, being against Israel seems like a natural position. But, like, say if I were, like, really mad at, like, what if I was like really critical of like the Bahamas?
I just hate the Bahamas.
The Bahamas, man. Just really angry. Actually, they might because there's blacks there. So let me think. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, is there any other country that
Guatemala? I hate Guatemala.
Well, I might think you're anti-immigrant there.
Estonia. I really hate Estonia.
Now you're good. Oh, no, you might be pro-Russian, actually, for that. But again, I still think, though, that even given that, you wouldn't get, that would not be something that they would.
I don't know that I've ever heard of the FBI investigating some money for hating Estonia or hating Guatemala or the Bahamas or any of these places.
I don't think so. No, actually, no, no. But it seems like they're really focused on people that say things that are against Israel. And now here's how this would be justified to the person who has actually pre-imbibed a lot of norms and assumptions of America. Well, animus against Israel, as he's saying here, and again, this guy seems to be probably cucking out on the Nazi thing. I don't really care. It's whatever. But is that it seems to be like you can be construed as being like pro-Nazi, right? Even if so what? What if I'm just pro-Nazi? That is legal in America to be pro-Nazi. You can be it, right? You can be pro-Nazi. So, again, why is this of... And additionally, you could say, well, maybe pro-Nazi is an indicator of being of potential violence. Well, let's take a look. Let's actually take a fucking look. Is that actually true? And is that true to a degree that is significantly greater than anything else? Like, in fact, the biggest indicator that you might be violent in America is, are you black? Are you black male between the ages of 15 and 35? If so, high likelihood, almost like 50% likelihood, 1 in 2, that you're going to do violence. You're going to be violent. Okay? So, right away, that's where you want to be looking if you really give a shit about this. But yeah.
What if I want to look into people who talk about blacks having a proclivity towards violence? Maybe that's the real problem.
Well, they seem to think so. They seem to think so.
Those are the people I should.
I'd also wonder, like, what if I look into people that like it, that are pro-Israel, as potentially being people that would say, try and get millions of people killed.
Wait a minute. Have they ever looked into pro-Israel extremists, extreme Zionists? Can you get on a watch list by being just the most militant Zionist possible?
I don't know if you can, but not now. You can't now, but there was a time in America where you could. And in fact, there was a time when they committed terror attacks and they committed murders on U.S. soil. And now those people are, you know, like in the New York City Assembly. I know Dov Hykind was in the JDL, the Jewish Defense League, which was actually considered, that was actually considered a terror organization, even by America. But of course, now that definitely doesn't exist anymore, right? And Irv Rubin, who was in that, went to jail, actually, for... and they murdered... one of the things they did in 1985, they murdered this guy, Alex Oda, who was a Palestinian activist in L.A. They blew him up in his office. They set a bomb in his office, blew him up, killed him. And, yeah, a cold case. Could never figure out who did that. Somehow that one just, you know, they covered their tracks real well. Definitely New York City Councilman Dov Hykind had nothing to do with it, though. Absolutely. Absolutely nothing to do with it. So, yeah.
Is there an FBI file on Dov Hykind?
There might be, but I'm probably is all fucking like redacted. Just as, like, redacted, closed, redacted. Yeah, sealed. Just like it probably just burned it and threw it away. Like, there's no point. Yeah,
it exists. You can't open it though.
Yeah, no, you like hurt. You burn your hand if you touch it. But yeah, all right. Let's see what more this guy has to say.
It seems to be a real big problem with everybody online as they project their own fucking beliefs onto me. He said that he was not anti-Jew, only anti-war, and Israel wants war. Yes, Manuel was very friendly, cooperative, and appeared to be...
So, again, why do you give a fuck?
It's like you got to qualify your opposition to Israel. Right. Are you saying to oppose Israel on some grounds? Can you explain that?
Right, and again...
It's very weird. You should love Israel.
The way they would justify this is, like, animus towards Israel, like, indicates that you might, like, hate Jews. Well, so what?
Right.
Am I required in America to love Jews?
I feel like we're back to the earlier stuff.
Yes, you are required to do that. I mean, I would say to this guy, like, I'm sure that, you know, it's terrible what was done to you, and I'm not trying to police how this guy opposes the FBI. It's good what he's done. But, like, well, actually, one, he actually did sit down with them for an interview, so I don't recommend doing it. I'll tell you this. Now, the reason he did that was because...
He wanted to be left alone.
He wanted to be left alone, but also he didn't think he had anything to hide. And I would suggest, though, another way to get them to leave you alone is to just have an attorney tell them, like, stay the hell away from my client unless you're going to charge him with a crime. Anything else, you go through me. That would be another way to approach this. But again, this guy felt like he didn't have anything to hide. I don't recommend doing what he did, just so it's clear. Like, I do not recommend sitting down and talking to them. I don't. But he then did it. I think it was an error, but it's providing this content. But it's also showing you, it's interesting, the fact that he did it, we can benefit by seeing what his interview was like and the kinds of things they're asking him. So, of course, they ask him, what's with this saying bad stuff about Israel? I would be like, why is this a question that the Federal Bureau, that the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation is asking me? What if I were to criticize, like, I mean, if you were to criticize...
Do you feel a hostility towards Israel? And I don't mean in a legal sense, I mean just a general...
Just sort of the general definition of the way we use the word hostile. You know, the typical everyday understanding of that word.
This is everyday understanding of hostility here.
Do you have an everyday understanding of hostility towards, say, Israel or, you know, Jews? Just curious. There's no legal definition here, so you don't have to worry about that.
See, this I wish I'd found that Dennis Prager clip, because this sort of leads into another thing where Dennis Prager was talking about...
Which Dennis Prager clip?
There's a clip of him talking about Jewish media, Jews being in control of the media, where he essentially concedes that, you know, yeah, Jews are in control of American media, but let me ask you, I'm going to get you here, how has that benefited Jews? Ha!
So
it hasn't helped us, has it?
This I've got to see. yeah, see, they're going to make it, like, tough to find, but...
And I've seen this before, because Steinlight did the same thing. And it's essentially what these right-wing Zionists, what they do is they say that because you don't tend to see really over-the-top Zionist content in American media, like you're not going to see stuff that's just rabidly pro-Israel.
Yeah. Well,
that means the Jewish control of the media is just a wash. It doesn't really impact anything. And I'm like, well, it obviously does, for one thing. Here's one very obvious thing it does. You're not going to see any anti-Israel and anti-Jewish content. They're not going to let any of that through. So you've already created a biased situation. Even if you're not doing pro-Israel, pro-Jewish stuff, you're keeping out any criticism of them, for sure. That's happened.
Right. Now, Dennis Prager is one of these guys. Here's one I've got. If you hate Israel, you're no friend of the Jews. Okay, fair enough. But anyway, let's keep going with this guy and see if there's anything more interesting. There's so many Dennis Prager videos, it's very difficult to find specifically this one, but yes.
Truthful with his answers. Fellow interviewers did not believe Mantle to be a threat to society. There does not appear to be a federal crime or nexus to terrorism at this time. They spent 7.5 months investigating me, going through one of my social medias, going through other things that I never found out what they went through. Oh, but... you know, time passed. I forgot about it. Forgot all about it. You know, we were cool. Like they were very nice. It's part of their job, though. And then I look at my email, and in my spam inbox, I have an email from something called Facebook Records. It said, "Hello, this notice is to inform you that we received legal process from law enforcement seeking information about your account and produced data as required by law. The legal process was accompanied by an order that prohibited us from disclosing information about the case until a specific time had expired, and we were legally required to produce the record specified in the demand." That made me so mad. So I filed a Freedom of Information and Privacy Act request. I filed it on June 13th, 2021. Finally received it on February 28th, 2022.
Wow.
And most of that time it was spent with a...
The only one slower than the feds is Matthew Cockrell.
A redaction specialist. One thing we have to keep in mind is that, yes, while the FBI is a very shady, dangerous organization that has a history of entrapping and radicalizing and recruiting people to attempt to carry out atrocities and acts of terrorism and other crimes against life and humanity, they are individual human beings.
No, I think we can...
grouped up working for this organization. And human beings are like coiled springs. You know, they have
potential, and that potential is waiting to be released. Whether that is for good or for bad, it's still potential. These agents, these different people, have the potential to be good humans.
No, and to I don't
any
think
FBI
I.
agents out there.
I disagree with this. At this the very
some,
least,
this is some amazing ass covering right here.
Well, like, this is also just when, like, you know, generally probably this, what this guy thinks on this stuff. I would say nah. I don't think that they do. I mean, maybe the people that blew the whistle.
It feels more to me like him being like, look, I'm not a radical anti-FBI extremist. Please just leave me alone. Stop fucking hassling me.
Right. But I mean, it's like, what? The funny thing is, they it's like, even by their own lights, what possible reason would they have to keep bothering this fucking guy?
Well, I mean, I think he's not a threat right now, but he might eventually.
I don't even think that's what it is. Like, it's obviously they're not investigating people for actually being terrorist threats, right? So the question is then, like, what is it about this guy that he's doing that he's not? I mean, is it just because he's continuing to criticize Israel? Is that literally, that's just what it is? I mean, it could be. It could be.
Well, it looks like, according to Stryker, Christopher Wray has left his congressional hearing early so that he won't be late for his vacation.
Oh. Where's he going on vacation? Israel?
I don't think so.
I don't think they're going to tell you where he's going. But yeah, I can't. I mean, do you have any more from this guy? Just the fact that they investigated
him? That's just the thing I wanted to get into, is how apparently being negative on Israel is something very interesting to the FBI.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of curious, like, why? And the funny thing is, if now, I'll never talk to the FBI, ever. But also, if the FBI wants to know my views on Israel and my reasoning, they don't ever need to ask me. They can just listen to this show. I will go into detail. I would be happy to explain. And I have done it before, many times, on the internet, why I oppose the state of Israel. I am perfectly happy to do that. Not to an FBI agent, because I will never... But again, if you're an FBI agent and you're listening, just, you know, subscribe. Subscribe to the paywall. Make sure you do that. It's illegal to consume paywall content unless you do that. And then you will find this out. But remember, if you don't pay, you're breaking the law.
Are there ever audits on the FBI? Can we do a routine audit on those guys? I feel like that's past due.
I think they probably do shit like that. I mean, I know they've got like the Inspector General and all this crap. Of course, the Inspector General is like a kike. I remember when they were like, there was a point at which like people were waiting for some Inspector General report, like in connection with this Mueller probe and shit like that. And of course, the guy doing
that. It looks like they audit their financial statements.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, and they
have an internal audit. Oh, well, that's good.
I'm sure
you want to be accountable to yourself.
It turns up a lot of stuff, you know. But one thing we were talking about earlier was the idea of designations, and when the feds designate you. And one reason why they might have bothered this guy for so long is they apparently designated him as a risk, albeit a low risk, for DVE. And the funny thing is, they're so fucking stupid and lazy that the people that they designate as such are simply people that are like online personalities, even if relatively small online personalities.
Well, the reason they do that is
because that's easier than doing work.
They designate you as a domestic violent extremist, yeah. And later they can show up before Congress and be like, look at this data on all these domestic violent extremists. You got to give us money.
We
need more money so we can track these people. We need to put more agents on them all the time.
It's to justify funding. And of course, they also make these appeals at like politically charged moments.
Well, the thing is, though, the funding is not neutral, right? If you give them the money, what are they going to use it for? They're going to go look for more of these domestic violent extremists and follow them around.
Right. And
until they find something.
Right. And this is specifically actually what people have been saying. I don't know if this is what the whistleblowers themselves said or if this is what people extrapolated, but the reason they do it is because they have a whole department dedicated to following people that are they see as political threats. This guy, despite the fact this video has 815 views and he's got like 5,000 some odd subscribers on YouTube, so he's got a little bit of a fan base, but it's not huge. But even that is enough And again, rather than do work, they go and look online at people saying stuff. And so then it just becomes about them, right? So they've got this guy, and they're going after him. And it's because the whole point of it is that they have people that they want to watch and aren't committing crimes. And they want to continue to violate their rights and put them under surveillance and bother them and bother their associates and friends. And there's no possible justification for this if they can't produce some reasoning behind it. So they try and generate things like the Buffalo shooting, which, as we know, the Buffalo shooter was in a Discord chat with six people, one of whom was an FBI agent. That's been reported by the Buffalo News. Of course, after that story somehow magically disappeared from the media. And there was never a follow-up on it. And I would even, like, this is something I would ask. Like, what's up with this? What's going on with this FBI agent in the chat with this kid that shot up the fucking supermarket? It's kind of a funny fucking coincidence, right?
It's always known to you guys. You always know about.
But this one is, like, particularly known. It's not just you knew about him. It's not just like this is somebody that committed it. Because a lot of times the reason the person was known was because they had exhibited previous erratic behavior or they had done something violent before and somebody called the FBI and told them about it or the local police told them about it or something like that. In this case, there was just an FBI agent in this kid's Discord. I mean, that's like a particular form of being known. And it's sort of like questioning. It's like, I mean, that's a very specific place for you to be. Particularly, like, they were saying it was a retired agent. And so I'm like, okay, so A, first of all, I don't believe you. Okay, first of all, I don't believe you this guy was retired. Secondly, how old is somebody when they usually retire from the FBI? What's the usual retirement age? Maybe 60. I don't know. Maybe you got a desk job. Maybe not till 65. I don't know. But, like, let's say an older person, right, is going to be a retired agent. So then, why are you in, like, a 17, 18-year-old kid's Discord? Like, does this happen a lot, where you get, like, old men?
Maybe you're helping produce intelligence products.
Right. I mean,
Maybe you're an independent contractor now, but you're still in the intelligence products business.
That's exactly right, actually. The person was probably on paper retired from the FBI. However, were they contracting with the FBI as somebody who was going to be
generating leads for them? Obfuscate exactly how connected you are to these situations just simply by doing the lazy trick of being like, well, I mean, he's retired from us. We still pay him, though, because we contract him.
I mean, he's retired from the FBI, but that's still, and you know what, the media, there was even something like Slate, I think, was the ones who ran ahead and said, like, oh, look, the FBI has racists in it because this guy retires from the FBI and then he joins this racist kid's Discord chat where he talks about, like, killing niggers. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure that's what's going on, Slate. I'm sure that. And then it's like, it's not like, I'm sure, like, the thing is with Slate, it's like, I don't think you're actually that dumb, so you're lying. Like, you know damn well why that fucking Fed was in that kid's chat. And it wasn't because he's also racist. It wasn't because we have a big problem with racists in the FBI, which, of course, that story being out there then justifies further purging of anybody with a conservative mindset that might be left over in these organizations. So, yeah, it's all bullshit. And it's basically the lesson here is, like, white Americans, you are considered the problem. As we've said, like, you're the problem to be solved. And this guy, Forrest Anon, this guy is considered by the FBI to be a problem for Saul, not because of anything he's going to do, because of who he is, and because he exists. And so that's what it is. And the only way this stops is if the FBI is gone. And I'm challenging the Republican Party. I mean, look, the Republican Party is right now doing a good job of grandstanding on this issue. And that's good. On some level, bringing this to people's attention is good. However, what won't be good is if you don't do shit. I am right now demanding the Republican Party defund the FBI. This is the demand. Defund the FBI. They need to just defund it. No more money for them. No more money for the FBI. And this is something I think that, given that the FBI has been caught out multiple times, not oppressing only white nationalists, but also conservatives, essentially investigating racial enemies of Jews or people that Jews consider to be their racial enemy. Not that that person has declared themselves as such, because this guy didn't, but the Jews declared him as such. Like, do you think there's a Jew? He says, I'm not anti-Jew. I'm like, well, what? There's a Jew out there that's going to say, I'm not anti nature-loving Catholic white guy? No. Every Jew hates the nature-loving Catholic white guy. Every single Jew hates that guy or considers him a problem. Not because of anything he's going to do, just because of him existing. So...
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like politically, like, this issue, I mean, what do you have to lose as a Republican for going hard on defunding the FBI? Well, has the FBI done anything good for you? I mean, I remember back when they were going after... They were gay-hopping Muslims is what they were doing. But that was like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
Probably further back than that.
That was also, in my opinion, that was like prep work. You know, like that was the whole bit. That was literally when it became true. Like, if you let them do it to Muslims, they're going to do it to you tomorrow.
They'll do it to you.
Yep. And they absolutely did.
And they did. Yep. They did. And they are still...
Because it's not like the FBI was like in love with white Americans in, what was it, 2001?
Yeah.
When the Patriot Act? No.
They certainly weren't in love with them in the 90s. That's
no, that's what I'm saying. Like, the FBI had a history of going after white right-wingers and militia types and wood guys in a woods type guys in the 90s. And that was their whole bit. Burning people to death. Assassinating people with snipers. So it's not like they had a good rep. And then, wow, okay, so some Muslims... who were, you know, probably associated with the state of Israel, you know, blow up the World Trade Center. And they say, oh, well, I guess those guys that were trying to destroy us all through the 90s, we're going to have to give them a lot of money and power and, you know, no oversight and all this shit and blah, blah, blah. So yeah. Now, I was looking at Dennis Prager videos trying to find the one, but there's so many, particularly where he talks about.
Well, he was talking about how he had owned an anti-Semite, you know, just, oh, you know, I thunderstruck this guy because I was like, well, look, what's the media done for us?
Yeah, see, here's how that works. And it's the same way that it works for Steven Steinlight, which is that the Jew that poses as the conservative says, well, yes, it's true that Jews own the media, but they don't use it to help Jews. I've heard Jews say this. Like, to me, they've said it when I've talked to them. Like, and I think that guy Savodnik said this. I don't know if it was him or someone else. But yeah, they pretend to you that, well, Jews are all individuals with a bunch of different opinions. Like we were talking with Kevin McDonald about, oh, you've got this big diversity of opinion. And, you know, the Jewish ownership of the media just reflects this wide range of individual Jewish people's opinions. I'm like... So this sort of monolithic, lip-tarded consensus they create through media coverage and movies and entertainment products, this is a wide range of individual views that creates this. Yeah. So yeah. But here, let me see. Let's like check out. I want to see if you hate Israel, you're no friend of the Jews. I just wanna...
Imagine a group of people who work to destroy Italy because they claim Italy's origins are illegitimate.
Okay, so Jews.
Right. Yeah, you just named a group that does that.
So, like, the people that do that are Jewish. Like, I don't have to imagine it.
Imagine further that these people maintain that of all the countries in the world, only Italy doesn't deserve to exist. And then imagine that these people vigorously deny that they are anti-Italian. Would you believe them? Now substitute Israel for Italy, and you'll understand the dishonesty and absurdity of the argument that one could be anti-Zionist, that is, against the existence of a Jewish state, but not anti-Semitic.
Okay, so.
Now, when did your state come into existence again? When was that?
Well, I don't even need to do this. It's
artificially
I'll be like...
created. I mean, this is a fucking false comparison, and you're comparing this to Italy.
Well, additionally, I would say this: are you against a state for white people? Like, and the thing is, you're also against a state for Italians because who is it that runs the immigration into Italy, specifically coming from the northern coast of Libya in Africa, and is welcoming people into southern Italy, welcoming refugees against the will of the Italian people. Who is doing that right now? Well, it is actually not just Jews, but literally Israel. The state of Israel, the state-sponsored IsraAid, which gets $60 million every year from the state of Israel, and God knows how much they get from private donations from Jews, but that's how much the state of Israel gives them, is literally sending people from Africa into Italy. And I would say, yes, I will say of all the countries in the world, only Israel doesn't deserve to exist. And the reason is because only Israel does shit like that.
I guess my question for Dennis Prager would be, would you disavow Jews who engage in deconstruction of white Western countries? Would you say that these Jews have a problem and they need to stop?
He might say it. He wouldn't say it. The race angle would trip him up. What he would say about the race angle is he would actually probably say he disavows deconstructing like Christian countries.
Yeah.
I'll bet you he would say that. He would say, when he says white, he would be like, well, hold on, let's not go too far, because we're not talking about white. White is not really. He would start deconstructing the very idea of white. Yeah, so yeah, then sure, that would be your answer right there. Yeah. Like, okay, so you did exactly what I thought you would do. Is mm-hmm. I thought, instead of saying I will oppose Jews that deconstruct the idea of white existence and a state for white people, I will actually just start to deconstruct it myself. Right. Yeah. And yeah,
so let's do the same thing to your people then. I mean, Ashkenazi, Sephardic, it looks like you've got a whole bunch.
Oh, dude, you could so easily do it to them. Like, you could do it to them easier than almost anybody. Really, Judaism literally is a social construct.
I'm not sure why would I grant you validity on your property claim based on the fact that your population lived there eons ago. And then the area was eventually resettled by other groups. Why do you get that piece of land?
Yeah, why would I do that? I remember when somebody asked that of like Charlie Kirk and Dave Rubin. They actually asked Charlie Kirk, like, why would you, and he was using like biblical, he was referenced because he thought he was talking like TPUSA Christian kids. And so he was using like biblical arguments for this. And the guy was like, okay, so like we always have to go back until we find like the legit owners of the country or something like that, until, you know, like, how do we determine this? And what about like America? Does this mean all of us here should just like leave America? And Dave Rubin said, well, I think that's a question to ask yourself. I'm like, no, Dave Rubin, I'm asking you. I don't need to ask myself. I've asked and answered it myself, which is I'm not fucking going anywhere. Now I'm asking you, Dave. And, you know, and that's why I agree with Palestinians don't have to go anywhere either. In fact, I support a one state solution for Palestine. And yes, I do think of all the countries in the world, Israel is the only one that does, like, legitimately just does not deserve to exist. And the reason is because they don't recognize anybody else's right to exist. If you're the one person that violates the principle, then you're the guy that doesn't get invited to the club. That's it, of the sort of recognizing each other's legitimacy club. Israel doesn't get an invite.
I mean, last time I checked, there's Palestinian Christians, right?
Uh-huh.
So maybe Christian nationalism should be about supporting the rights of Palestinians to have that land and have a revival of Christian teachings.
Well, what about Laura Loomer? Laura Loomer, the Christian nationalist, the new leader of Christian nationalism.
No, there's an interesting thing that happened. Laura Loomer came out and said that she is Jewish, but she supports Christian nationalism.
So she didn't actually convert? So
Peters clarified, because Stu Peters was saying that she had been baptized. So I thought she
actually confirmed that herself then.
In my understanding, she said that she was Jewish, but that she supported Christian nationalism.
Oh, even better, because right. There's Christian nationalist Palestinians.
Yeah.
Who I support. I support them.
Yeah, support the Christian nationalists in Palestine.
Sure. Well, also, the you know, in Palestine, the Christians have decided to sort of have a detente or just, frankly, work together with the Muslims. Now, that wasn't always the case. There have been problems of that in the past. That has actually created. And, of course, guess who was behind trying to stir that problem up? Yeah, you bet. It's not that hard to guess. Who was trying to get the Christians to be intolerant of Muslims and the Muslims to be intolerant of Christians in Palestine. It's pretty easy to guess who would be behind something like that. But they've gotten, for the most part, they've actually gotten beyond that. And they have actually smartened up about that. There was a period where they were dumbass about it, and they lost out. They actually weakened themselves by doing that. And they don't, they, you know, So a lot of the Palestinians have gotten beyond that. So do you support the decision of the Christian nationalists in Palestine to have a to work with their Muslim brethren against their common enemy? Their racial brethren, the people who are the same race but a different religion, and they are working together against their common enemy, which is Jews. I'm just curious if Laura Loomer, as a supporter of Christian nationalism, would recognize the right of the Palestinian Christian nationalists to make such a decision for themselves. So, yeah, I mean, it's all just retarded. It doesn't surprise me that she came out and said, yeah, no, I didn't do that. Because it's like, it is actually completely ridiculous and retarded for her to have actually done that. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but basically what would be happening if she did that, she would kiss goodbye any chances she would have to win a congressional seat in Florida if she were to do that, right? Particularly in the super heavy Jewish areas where she runs. Like, she was running in a super Jewy area where the ads that they run against each other, she was running against this Jew, Lois Frankel, and the ads that they were running were basically, I'm going to do more for Israel. No, I'm going to do more for Israel. And they're legitimately just advertising to Jews. It's just like, these are just right to Jews. Like, there's maybe some non-Jews that live in that county, but not very many, or whatever that district, you know, it's a heavily Jew. So there's like, it's literally like both of them were just emblazoning the Jew flag on their literature and shit like that. It was ridiculous. Also, like, it's not, the funny thing is, like, Laura Loomer, it's like, she lost really bad because this woman, Lois Frankel, has been in Congress for like 20 years. It's like, why do the people in like Palm Beach need to vote for you? It's not like Lois Frankel hasn't been delivering. I'm sure she's a Democrat, but it's not like she hasn't been.
It's just kind of funny to me that she could not herself claim to be a Christian and have any chance of being elected in that area. Like, right. But I thought that the Jews were supporting the Christian nationalists. Why does that matter?
Why can't you run in a heavily Jewish area as a Christian nationalist? Why would that be like electoral suicide? Yeah, being a fucking Zionist is not expected to be electoral suicide anywhere in America. The thing is, they don't really tell you to make a big deal of it. Like, they want you to do it, but not run on it. Right? Like, they'll all have some kind of bland statement, like, of supporting Israel, but they never make that, like, it's very rare. Unless they're running in a heavily Jewish area, it's very rare for them to focus on that. So, yeah, this Dennis Prager video is about what you'd expect. It's like, I don't really give a shit about doing... The other thing is, here's how you disarm what Dennis Prager is doing here. Yeah, I don't care. Yeah. If you say I'm anti-Semitic, because I actually agree that not supporting Israel is anti-Semitic. I think that the goys, some of these leftists and Gentiles that oppose Israel... because they're disgusted with its behavior but want to lie to themselves and say they're not anti-Semitic. You're actually anti-Semitic. Because Israel is a manifestation of Judaism in the real world. It is an actual living example of Judaism and its value system in operation in the real world. So Jews on the ground, given state power, are doing this. And it is because they are Jewish. And they will tell you this. And you saying, I don't believe you, is also a form of anti-Semitism, because you're basically saying Jews are liars.
Well, I mean, they are.
And they are, but they're not. But and this,
they lie for their best interest, though.
Yeah. I mean, and again, and the funny thing is, it's like, all you have to do to get Dennis Prager to stop doing this is pass the shit test. Just be like, yeah, okay, fine. And then he will then start saying, well, you could theoretically, you know, oppose Israel and not necessarily be opposed to the Jewish people themselves. Like, that's what they would say as like a retreat position, but since he feels like he's got all these people saying, well, it's not that I hate Jews, it's just Israel. Like, since he's got that, he knows that when you say that, oh, now I've got an opening to fuck with this person. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't even need to... hold on a second. Okay, hold up. This one... Just look at the title of this one. Like, we can go out of this. Just look at the title of this video.
What have we got here? Israel, the world's most moral... what? The most moral army.
Yeah, because it never fights.
It's most ethical genocide here.
I suppose you could say that because they never fight. It's like, if an army never fights, I suppose you could say that, yeah.
I want to see the justification for that.
There are two views of the Israeli military. What you hear in most of the media and the truth. I'm going to tell you the truth. I was the commander of British forces in Afghanistan. I have fought in combat zones around the world, including Northern Ireland, Bosnia, Macedonia, and Iraq.
So wait, why are you in all these different places? So you're saying you're holding yourself up as an example of an immoral army?
Yeah, it sounds like you're a mercenary.
So you're like you're saying like I'm a piece of shit British imperialist, and like Israel's way better than me. Is that the fucking approach he's taking? That's not what he's going to say, but like that would be kind of funny in and of itself. It's like, as an example of an immoral army, take, say, the British army.
I was also present throughout the conflict in Gaza in 2014.
Why?
Based on my experience and on my observations, the Israel Defense Force, the IDF, does more to safeguard the rights of civilians in a combat zone than any other army in the history of warfare.
He is saying that, including myself. Because frankly, we don't do shit.
I kill so many civilians.
Dude, man. The British military, civilians, woof. Just so many. Like, it's just a lot. It's like a big number. And yeah, the Israelis don't do that. We just do that for them. Because as a British military, you know why the Israeli military doesn't kill so many civilians? Because as a British general, I can tell you, we go ahead and do that killing for them.
Yeah. All right. Are we about wrapped up here?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if we need to.
I got an unannounced visitor as usual. It's a boomer.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because they don't understand this idea of like maybe I should contact the person that I'm headed over to visit before I show up.
That's a bit of a modernist viewpoint where people used to just drop by. Okay, where the hell is the outro music? Oh, I don't even know where it is. I've literally got to find the outro music. I thought I had it. Where is it? New Nixon. Where is it? I had it. Oh my god. Yeah, here we go. Okay, so now we can go. All right, see you guys.
Always give your best. Never discouraged. Never be petty. Always remember. Others may hate. Those who hate you don't hate unless you hate them. Then you destroy yourself.